This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. As you can tell, I am not Garnett Lee. He is off rolling at dice. So you have me, Jeff Cannata with 2 N's, 1 T, holding down the hosting duties for today. We got a great show, though. Fear not. We got an awesome group here. Let me introduce them for you. First up, my co-Jeff.
Yo.
The man who comes at us with Dead Space 3 Madness.
Yes.
Confirming his status on Games Apparatus. It's Indie Jeff Mattis.
Wow. That was very rhymingly awesome.
Oh, it gets better.
Okay.
Next up, and not a moment too soon, because today he reviews the cartoon platformer raccoon, always the best dressed man in the room. He makes the ladies swoon. It's Andrew Yoon.
Wow. Wow, can we just end there? Is the show done?
And finally, our very special guest. He's a first-timer. We checked. He's here to reflect on MMOs that select to go free-to-play to collect enough cash to resurrect. It's Alex Albrecht.
Hey, yo! I was wondering where that the rhyming was going to come in. I was like, collect. I was like, oh, my name!
You're familiar with your
yeah,
last name,
I was like,
right?
Wait a minute. So well, thanks for having me.
It's
very
awesome.
Excited.
Obviously, yeah. Dude, welcome, Alex and I go way back on TRS and other things.
Yep.
Project Lore.
Yes.
So it's awesome that you are hanging out with us.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's been it was too long before we got you in here. We should have gotten you in here much sooner.
That also, almost rhymed.
Also, too.
Almost.
Also, to your listeners, I'm amazed that you just did that freestyle without.
I did. Yeah. I did not know without a beat.
Yeah.
Or an iPhone.
So as I indicated in all that weirdness. We're going to talk about some really cool games, including Dead Space 3, Sly Cooper. Alex is going to regale us with some of the things he's obsessed about, namely
everything,
MMOs.
Everything, Moes.
I might even delve into some tabletop stuff, because I've been traveling this week.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I think we should start, however, with Andrew. You
whoa.
Got some.
Whoa.
Are you prepared
okay.
for this?
Yeah, okay. To Yoon?
I don't know.
Take it away.
That was good. That was a good freestyle.
I get it. All right. So we'll start with Sly Cooper. Did you guys ever play the original three games?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So if you love them, then four is essentially as if, you know, like, I don't know, the years 2001 to now, or like didn't happen, or something like that.
Oh, God, I wish that happened.
can we make that for real? Let's just take it off.
It is incredible. It's the logical progression of where the series would go. And like, you know, it's been a long time since Sly 3 came out, but man, you just jump right into it. It just feels like a, you know, glove just going over your hand. You're like, oh, wow, I totally remember exactly what to do. And so, like, it just feels so good as, like, a Sly fan, in spite of it being from a different developer. So, as you know, you guys probably know that that Sucker Punch, the guys that made the first three games, they moved on to Infamous. But there's this new team called Sanzaru. They actually made the HD collection.
Right.
PS3.
And so they actually made the game from scratch, and it is just so good. Like, just... like every aspect of it. I mean, the graphics are great. Like, it really looks like a cartoon. And
yeah.
So as a fan of the series, I'm definitely going to check it out. But mm-hmm. how is the job it does introducing new folks to all these?
I do think
crazy
it's a little.
Characters?
I do think it's a little intimidating because the story actually continues right after three.
Really?
Oh,
that's interesting.
So, like,
any recap or anything? Like,
they do like a sort of recap, but I, like
previously.
But they're really sly about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I got lots of
you know, they like, you know, let you know that Sly's a thief and that,
right.
you know, and Carmelita is his girlfriend and, you know, they sort of introduce the characters, but it is like really deeply tied to that lore. Because at the end of Sly 3, Bentley says, oh, you know, I'm going to make a time machine. And then the game, the franchise just ended there.
Right, right.
I'm going to time travel into 2013.
Yeah.
That's right.
Or time travel back and not play these games.
But yeah, I mean, what makes that game so great is that the writing is terrific. Like, it's hard to be funny in games. Mm-hmm. And I actually found myself laughing quite a bit throughout, throughout the adventure. There's just like... the way they do the animation is just terrific. So there's just a lot of like really subtle like visual gags. You might like see an enemy like do something like really stupid in the background, like just like in the corner of your eye. You're like, huh? Did that happen? And it's just, like it's sort of it. There's a lot of moments like that, and there's a lot of variety. So that's actually what really sold me. The later Sly games, they sort of like they're all like based on like the heist, right?
Right,
you know,
right,
the,
yeah.
the entire team works together to steal a certain valuable object. And every level in the game, in the new one, is like that. So you know, it just it always feels really great when you're switching between all these characters, and you're like, you know, it really feels epic.
Still a lot of cool mini games and like distractions and stuff.
Yeah, tons of mini games. So like you know, I remember in the first level, you have to. Seduce these guards. So you're
seduce these guards. Amazing.
So you're Murray, who's the pink hippo, and he's dressed in drag, mm-hmm. And he has to sing karaoke and do a dance number. And you're like, you know, like a little like DDR style thing, like awesome. Scrolls at the bottom, and you're like, this is amazing.
See, that's how I get into every club in LA.
Yeah, rap with the rapper style.
Yeah. It totally works.
One of the boss fights ends in an ice skating tournament.
that's awesome.
Let's see. And the ice skater is a graffiti rapper artist, Bear. So it's like,
of course, naturally.
And there's just so many wonderful moments. There's actually an 80s training montage. Like,
Oh my god, that's amazing.
You play as one of Sly's ancestors, and he has to get back in shape. And so
he needs a montage.
Yeah. So like, so you know, you go through like these like mini games, and then at the very end, they like do like. They just bring it all together, sort of like WarioWare style, where you have to like do 3 seconds of like juggling, 3 seconds of batting, and like
so brilliant,
yeah. And like you know, and there's like little animations in between where he's like doing push-ups and like the bad music like playing in the background. It's just so clever and it's just so much fun. It really like you know, is it the deepest game? No, probably not. You know, but it is Sly. And what really pains me about this is that it's a wonderful game. And no one knows that it came out. Right.
I had no idea that it came out. I mean, literally, when I saw the talking points, I was like, that came out? Like, maybe I saw one ad, maybe, way back in the day, but sure as heck not a AAA title from Sony that's going to be coming out anytime soon.
Yeah.
And that, you know, so what I want to talk about is just, like, Sony's just dropping the ball so hard on these games. Like, so many of their games have just tanked recently. And
well, they did also just switch advertising agencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
So they dropped the advertising agency they were working with that did all the like Kevin, what's it?
The Kevin Butler stuff.
Yeah.
I
love that stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, it ended poorly between the actor that did Kevin Butler and Sony. Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah. There was a lawsuit involved. And,
oh, geez.
Yeah. So, you know, that could have been one of the reasons why the marketing just sort of like. Disappeared for the past few
Didn't
months.
Didn't that stem from the fact that he did something similar with another
Yeah, he
company?
Did a commercial for Bridgestone, the tire company.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I remember that.
Devin Duttler.
Well, he played a scientist, right?
Yeah, and he was like, I think it was like a Wii U cross promotion or something like that. So like he mentioned a competing video game and Sony's like, you can't do that. You're Kevin Butler. And he's like, no, I'm a real person. I can do whatever.
You don't have my soul.
You don't have my soul.
Actually, on the contract.
You clearly did not read your contract.
Exactly.
So
when you were signing it in your own blood.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, there's like Little Big Planet Karting, which was also, you know, a really solid game. That came out last year. And no one knew it came out. I don't actually know when it came out. All I know is it did come out. And we work in the industry, okay? We, like, you know, we do a video game podcast.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If we don't know that these games are coming out...
Yeah, odds are, I mean, we get, you know, email promotion or PR emails for, like...
Everything,
basically.
Fangs,
stuff
2 on the iPhone. You're like, what's Fangs 1?
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for this email, Rebecca.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And another frustrating thing, it's great on Vita. So Sly Cooper is available on PS3 and Vita. It's part of Sony's cross-buy promos. If you buy the PS3 version, you get the Vita version for free.
God, that's rad. This is all information that Vita and PS3 owners would like to know.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Does it have a, if you play on one, you can pick up where you left off on
the other? Yeah, so it has a cross-save, so you can just upload the save file to the cloud. And yeah, it's the exact same game. The PS3 version runs better because it's a console and not in your hand. But, I mean, considering how few games are on Vita right now, you know, that's like, this is a big deal, you know? And just no one knows about any of this stuff. So actually, you know, it's actually really distressing because earlier this week, I don't know if you guys heard, but Superbot, they're the guys that made PlayStation All-Stars, the mascot fighting game. Mm-hmm. They're essentially gonna fold, you know, because Sony discontinued their relationship with them after PlayStation All-Stars sort of tanked. Of course, why did it tank? No one knew about that game either. Came out at a terrible time.
And
the marketing
was really bad for it because it was like, watch people fighting. And then it was sort of like, so is that the game? Even though that is the game.
Right.
And it got swallowed up.
It doesn't entice people to play it.
Exactly.
It got swallowed up in that end of the year craziness that always happens. And if it had come out in a little window where there wasn't much else going on, it would have been a lot better.
Well, and it was Sony's big first party game for last year. And they... Because, you know, Microsoft,
it was all over E3
Microsoft
too.
Had Halo 4 come out last year.
Yeah.
Sony came out with this. And, you know, yeah, it's, like, cool for fans, but, like, and it's by no means a bad game. It's actually a pretty decent game, but it really sucks that these developers who put a lot of effort into these titles, Sony just drops the ball at the very end. So other teams that closed or, you know, sort of got destroyed earlier in the year, Eat Sleep Play, Nihilistic. Mm. The Workshop, Lightbox, Idle Minds. These are all Sony studio, not owned by Sony, but you know. So Eat Sleep Play, they did the Twisted Metal game, once again, did Sony even let anyone know that Twisted Metal was out?
Not really.
Like, you know,
Dave Jaffe was making a bigger noise about it than anyone else.
What's the point of like making a big hubbub, you know, at E3 and like doing previews and like, you know, doing all this like buzz and then not let anyone know when the game actually comes out? So, you know, easily played there.
It almost seems to me like that there's, you know, people in corporate marketing, they just get certain things that come across their desk where they're like, I don't know how to market this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what this is. Like, well, I'll just put it in, you know, we'll, you know, release it to very little fanfare. And I mean, if I were to spend marketing dollars on this, I don't even know who I would sell it to.
Yeah, or it comes across the desk and they go, okay, we'll make a big deal out of this at E3.
Yeah,
well, that doesn't do it.
I mean, all this obviously is just speculation on our part, but I wonder if it's more like we make a big deal at E3, and then when nobody seems to be super excited about these games, then it's like, well, I guess we'll
cut and run.
Yeah, I think it's more like, well, it seems like it's going to get that buzz. Yeah. So
spent like $20 million making a game, like,
yeah, but if you're going to spend $20 million more selling it, and you don't think it's going to make $40 million, maybe you go, I'll take the loss. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, studios do that all the time. And now that we're seeing AAA titles costing sometimes more than big budget movies, you start to get that mentality of, hey, is it better to take a $20 million loss or a $40 million loss? Mm-hmm. And if we're seeing a $40 million loss, $20 million is not so bad.
And if you look at the sort of reception to both Twisted Metal and All-Stars, it was sort of lukewarm. There wasn't that groundswell of pre-orders and stuff that you see with the stuff that gets a real big push. And it's ironic that those are the titles that need more marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that there's somebody crunching the numbers in some office somewhere going, like you said, let's just cut our
losses. Well, they're good at marketing big AAA stuff that arguably doesn't need much marketing, and they're horrible at marketing mid-tier to lower end
stuff. Well, it's easy
to
push the snowball down the mountain that's already half a snowball than it is to start the pebble. And
yeah,
make
it's
it
like,
into
oh,
a snowball.
Great, our marketing campaign for Call of Duty Black Ops 7 must have worked. It's like, not really. Yeah, you got a fan base.
That ad could have been somebody holding the box for it for 30 seconds and everybody would have bought that game. You know what I mean? Like, there's a certain point where you go, the games that people don't quite know are the games that people need that info about, that needs to get out to the people that would like them.
Yeah, you're growing mind share. You're not
I mean, some of the games, some of the studios, the games that they made weren't that great. Like, Nihilistic, when they made Call of Duty Black Ops Declassified on Vita. Yeah, that wasn't a great game, you know.
Right.
But something like Starhawk. Starhawk was an amazing game that got no attention. And And I really do feel like
Sly Cooper. Starhawk come out?
Starhawk did come out, and then
that was the game that like people fall in. And you were, yeah. We played that E3. I loved that. I was like so excited.
Yeah, and
man,
yeah.
Marketing fails all around apparently.
And I'm aware of video games, yeah. Like of all the people in the world. If I don't know, then a guy who lives in Oklahoma who right. just kind of likes video games is sure as heck not going to know.
So yeah, more than anything, I get worried about PlayStation 4. If Sony's not going to support their developers now, like I just don't know how viable it is. Like who after this year, like who would want to support Sony if Sony's like who would want to make an exclusive game for Sony?
I mean, this yeah. sounds really cynical, but it may be that they already know. Like okay, our console's coming out within this window.
Yeah,
fuck spending $1 on the rest of the shit and just.
A part of me does feel like they're just abandoning ship.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
They're whatever.
When it feels like that for the consumer, that's bad.
Oh, yeah.
That's, like, terrible.
But also, that doesn't give you much confidence in the next iteration right. because wait a minute. If that's happening now, that could happen week one into my $1,000 purchase of the new Sony console.
That's strange because that was the exact opposite of their strategy with PS2 to PS3 because PS2 got a very strong
and they're
long
still
tail.
Making PS2 games. I mean, every time we go to E3 and I watch that press conference, I'm like, we just spent 20 minutes on PS2, guys. I don't know if anybody knows that or not, but
not so much this last year, but yeah.
True,
yeah.
But I mean
they did finally discontinue the PS2 a few weeks ago.
It was sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it really does feel like they're abandoning ship, and I get worried about the remaining PS3 games that are coming out. Like,
well, you got to play a few of them, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I got to play The Last of Us, which
that's a game that I am interested in.
Yeah, very much.
It is so good.
If they don't give that a marketing push, I mean, come on,
yeah,
then something's up.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Because a game like Last of Us, you know, we're hardcore gamers and like we're like psyched about it because like oh, it's the Uncharted team, but like you have to sell that to gamers that. Don't read the sites. Don't listen to podcasts. You know, a
I
game
think
like
they
that.
Will. I think
no, but
that
it's
game
also,
is,
but that. Well,
the game
but think about
itself,
it. But no,
man.
It doesn't.
No.
It doesn't.
Because
it's Heavy Rain. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you got it. It's different than Uncharted. You can't just go from the makers of Uncharted, the crazy action shooter game that you love.
Yeah.
Because it's not that.
But it's so cinematic. I think.
Yeah, the trailer for that game is going to be. And you look at games like Dead Island, where you go, "Is Dead Island a great game? I mean, it's a good game. I played the hell out of it." But also, the cinematic trailer was what sold that game, and they did way
5 million
they thought,
copies.
Way more than they should have.
5 million copies for that game.
And those, the guys who made that game probably went, we should not have sold 5 million.
Although I'm convinced that like 2.5 million of those were because it was on sale for like $5 on Steam for like all the holidays.
I mean, regardless, most games would love to make 5 million sales.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah. Even, I mean, it clearly did well enough that they bought. You know, freaking Saints Row? You know,
right. Well, was all the marketing dollars from that come from Deep Silver, or did that? I mean, who put the marketing muscle behind that game?
Yeah, it was because, Deep Silver.
Yeah, so it was all Deep Silver. So they're obviously doing something right because they can sell.
Well, but I think that too is. But you got to realize that was a creative marketing plan, right? That wasn't like an ad that you saw all over the place. I mean, I saw that on TV maybe once. Really, it was. You've got to see this crazy trailer. And watching the trailer, I was like, oh my God, and sending it out to everybody. I mean, that was like a viral video.
Yeah, but I think we should make a distinction between marketing and awareness because I think what we're all talking about, or at least what we were talking about, was awareness of these games. And marketing is a more subtle art, and it gets a lot of negative reaction from people because of stuff like Dead Island, where it's like, hey, look at this thing with this
marketing.
Game. And the game is not anything like that.
Marketing is targeted selling, right?
So,
you know, awareness is basically just I want you to know this exists.
Awareness is much more important with stuff like what we're talking about, like All Stars and
Twisted Metal. Yeah.
Where, you know, you need to have that information permeate the culture, like release date and availability.
I mean,
and all
I think
that
Sony's
stuff.
Just been. Really bad about awareness for the longest time. I mean, you know, even from the get-go on the PS3, it's like, it's $600. Why is it so expensive? Well, it has a Blu-ray player. What's Blu-ray? Like, even now, there's like things that the PS3 can do that people just are unaware of, you know?
Right.
And that console's been out for 7 years, you know? Like, how many people still know that, like, PlayStation Network is free, you know? Like, stuff like that. Yeah. How long did it take for them to, like, tell people what PlayStation Plus is?
I like the fact that there's this thing called PlayStation Home, and they don't tell anyone about that.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah.
It's still a thing.
Oh, yeah, and apparently it's got, you know, there's some people that use it a lot.
Yeah, yeah, it's got
it
very
still makes
passionate
money.
Users.
Yeah, it still makes money.
It's crazy.
I mean,
and have you ever heard them speak word one about home?
Only at press conferences at E3. And
yeah,
that was
years ago.
It was years ago.
Yeah.
And a buddy of mine worked on it. Jack worked on it, so yeah. I know just from him. But otherwise, and I think I went in once.
All right.
But I feel it's like
my favorite PlayStation Home moment when I logged in. I saw this guy in a Santa Claus costume. His handle was Kids Meal, KIDZ_MEAL, and he was just like talking to this girl avatar, and she just immediately signs off, and I'm like. I'm like, I think I figured out what was happening.
Right. I get this. It feels like home.
No toy surprise inside that conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Drunk dad dresses Santa.
It's interesting. You think about this. This generation is such a like. I mean, I wonder if it's all generations, and I'm just not really thinking about it yet because this is just dawning on me that the whole idea of like, well, motion control's a thing. We're all gonna do motion control stuff. Avatars are a thing. Oh, let's all do avatars. My avatar has a bigger area to walk around in than your avatar thing, and my avatar can be more customized than your avatar. And it's such a follow the all three major console manufacturers. Just, I mean, I guess everybody was following Nintendo.
But does anybody? I mean,
well,
does the casual consumer even get excited about that sort of stuff? Like
I don't know.
Do they even notice? Like,
I think the Wii was so excited because it was like new and cheap.
And different.
Well, and it was offering
a unique experience.
Yeah, that's what I meant by new. Like, you know, it's like, oh, I get up. I had friends over when I first got the Wii to play tennis, and they were like, oh, it's amazing. That was the use I got out of my Wii.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't have tennis matches at my house, in my living room, ever.
You could.
I could on many different platforms now. Thank you very much, technology.
But I mean, look at the Wii tablet, right? How do you sell that even remotely the same way? You know, like what's the hook that everybody's like, oh, I can play tennis in my living room.
Now we want you to sit back down on the couch and we'll actually make money.
And we'll give you something that looks like an iPad with buttons on it. Yeah. And I don't know.
But I think you're right. It has always been that. And that's why you don't get massive game changing things literally every year, every iteration. Because there is a lot of that we got to do. And again, it's come down to the thing of it costs a lot of money to create a new console and launch a new console. And some of these companies, this generation of consoles more than any, it's the company's life. If these launches don't go well, the company stops. You know what I mean? Like Sony's not going to go out of business, but they may stop.
Sony's in a really bad position.
They may stop making a video game console. That might happen.
I mean, everyone always says, you know, when is Nintendo going to leave the hardware business? Really, Sony's more likely to leave for Nintendo.
If it could happen to Sega, you know what I mean? Like, and Sega was one of the top dogs, and I say that as a Genesis and Sega Master System lover.
Yeah, but I mean, Sony is a hardware company. They make the money making TVs and
but that's different than a video game console,
right? But
because
it's an electronics company.
Well, yeah, but it's like Apple. It's like sure, Apple still makes hardware, but really, at its heart, they're a small accessories / software / a music and media company. And that's the same thing that all these companies are trying to become. They're all trying to become Apple for your home TV. I mean, they're trying to do what Apple TV did. And I think the problem is they're starting to lean less and less on the actual video games that they're making and more and more on, we just want to own your TV.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually looking at, Andrew and I were talking about the hardware specs and stuff that for both new gen systems and how they're basically identical in a lot of ways. And
it's happening, bitches.
For the first time, vindication. Though, like I think that like Steambox could actually, stick it to both of all three of the major console companies and go, look, here's a much better product that is upgradable, that is modular, that will fit in your living room, that gets you onto the internet, that gets you all this crap that all these services that you already want, and if you can raise marketing and awareness for the average consumer, and they see what it can do, and it's affordable, they're in a very good.
They got to solve the ease of use problem, and if that's what the Steambox ends up doing,
it's supposed to be just a thing you plug and play.
Yeah, it's like the Apple TV. Yeah. I mean, if it can be the Apple TV for video games, sign me up. Plus, dude, you don't really need that mass market marketing to it because everybody that has a Steam account is getting marketed to.
Right.
That's everybody true. Who goes and buys Call of Duty on the PC and then goes, oh, wait a minute, I can buy this box for $100 and plug it into my TV and play Call of Duty sitting on my couch. Right. And I don't want to spend the money on a, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I already own the game. Hey, maybe that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's just a matter of like here's a new thing, everyone, and like you don't have to.
Yeah.
You're not tied to PS4 anymore. You're not tied to.
I think the Apple TV is actually going to do worlds of good for a thing like the Steam Box coming out now, because knowing how easy it is to plug in an Apple TV and utilize it, and really it's just a computer. I mean, that's all an Apple TV is. Right. It's just
but remember,
streams internet.
Remember,
stuff,
Apple stuff. TV is. Not successful either.
Well, that's just
that.
Because Apple doesn't want to
somehow.
Do it
somehow we got off you talking about Last of Us. So
okay, Last of Us. Yes. What do you want to know?
I want to know. Like the game is awesome. How awesome is the game?
It's very awesome.
Okay.
No, but really, throw some questions.
Okay.
At
okay.
Me.
So obviously, what's the pacing of like what you played like? Because it obviously
it's very
seems
methodical. So it, like reminds me of It reminds me of like really old Resident Evil, not new Resident Evil. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
In my preview, I said you know. Survival horror has essentially devolved into a shooter, which you'll talk about in your Dead Space 3 segment.
Yeah.
But Last of Us is not like that. Like it was really funny. I had to do an interview and then had to wait to play. So I'm just watching all the journalists play, and just so many game over screens, like over and over
really?
And over again. Just everyone is just constantly dying because you really have to approach it in a different way. Like if you go into it playing it like Uncharted. You are fucked, you know.
Yeah.
Which
does
is
it
good
feel
because
like
I
Uncharted,
hated
though?
The combat in Uncharted.
Does it feel? I mean, do you sort of instinctually want to play it like Uncharted? Or
I mean, as a gamer and like you know, just like we haven't had like this really slow stealth game. I played Splinter Cell, the Blacklist, and you know, like once again, you're like really rushing through that, and like it's a very fast.
Tag 12 dudes, kill them all in a second.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's very aggressive. So like, as gamers, we've sort of been trained to do that over the past few years. And so to actually, like, be stealthy and be like, I'm going to hide behind this door. I'm going to hide behind this, like, shelf and literally wait for, like, 3 minutes to, like, actually find an opening, you know? Like,
I love shelf waiting.
Yeah.
Like, is that going to be thrilling for everyone? Of course not. But for gamers that are, like, really into it, because, like, what, like, the zombies, well, they're not the zombies technically, but the zombies of that game, one bite will kill you. So it's just, like, it's not, like... No matter how much health you have, like,
that's
if they
great.
Bite you, it's just, it's over.
So interesting. I know I sound like a hypocrite with all my, like, I hate game over screens thing, but this the fiction of this just sounds so much more interesting when the stakes are that high and it forces you into a different kind of game.
Well, it's like
mode.
DayZ. Yeah. And I mean, that's what's so great about DayZ. Yeah.
Or everybody's yelling Dark Souls
Dark
right
Souls.
Now.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing is if you know going in that's part of it, then it is a risk-reward thing.
Is what's her name, Ellie or something?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm under NDA. I can't confirm or deny her name is Ellie.
Does she feel like a real character? Or
actually,
a real
right now, it's like really still really early. Like
it's more like
the
a
way,
pet dog or whatever.
The way actually Stable. The way you the level that I played, you have almost no interaction with her because it's like really early on. And actually, a lot of segments are like, "Hey, Joel, why don't you take care of this?" And then you know she just. Sort of stays behind, but it's also like really early in the game when you guys aren't actually.
You haven't bonded yet.
Well, apparently, the story. And I'm not exactly sure why this setup, but essentially, you're kidnapping her. So she does. You guys aren't. You guys aren't.
That's a twist.
You guys, I guess, don't. It's not like a buddy movie from the get go.
Interesting.
Yeah, the twist is you have to sacrifice her to save the world.
Like, I'm saving you from zombies.
Yeah.
I'm saving the world. I'm saving the world from infected people by murdering this child. Yeah. Oh, sad face.
All right, we got to take a break. The zombies are infesting our room right now. So we'll be back talking about more games. Stick with us.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
You should listen to that guy. He sounds smart and attractive.
Man, if I was on like a plane ride with him, I don't know what I'd do.
Oh, awkward callback. Oh, boy.
Save us, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. So the Dead Spaces, the third one.
Yeah.
I played it.
You played the crap out of it.
I played it multiple times.
I did play the crap out of it. So I played it once, got the game on Friday, last Friday, played it once solo, then played it again with Ozzy from Shaq News.
And that's because you loved it so much you had to play it twice.
Clearly. No, it was because we had to review both components of the game, the co-op.
And some jerk gave you like some crazy deadline.
I know. We'll have to have words with him. No, but it's – so for fans, you sort of know what to expect from this year. I guess even non-fans at this point should sort of know what Dead Space is.
You're in space. Things are dead.
Yeah, and they're trying to kill you, and you got to shoot them. Still, one of the things that struck me, I guess, playing the third one, because, you know, it had been a while since I played two, is that it, for me, it is very, very interesting mechanically, way more so than a lot of other shooters, because... And actually, the game illustrates this itself. It throws some human enemies at you at some point, and it goes from, okay, which limbs do I have to shoot off in which order, and how do I do crowd control, to, oh, I can just shoot this guy twice in the face.
I really hope no senators are listening to this part of the conversation.
Yes. No, this is
really,
all,
really not going to help.
Yeah, the space alien sort of like humans.
The show is actually huge among senators.
Yes. Yes, I hope Bernie Sanders is listening. Yeah. No.
Colonel Bernie Sanders?
Not Colonel Bernie Sanders. He makes some good chicken.
As long as Saxby Chambliss is one of our listeners, that's all I care about.
He's got a great name.
Saxby Chambliss. Sorry,
anyway,
go ahead.
So Dead Space 3, it's basically more Dead Space. Very, very atmospheric. Still has incredible sound design. It looks beautiful. It is probably like the shooting in it feels probably the best of the three. They've, you know, the first game kind of had like a slow, more of a, you know, deliberate turning, but this feels more like
a shooter.
Yeah. Snappy. Like a shooter. You can aim and shoot and pretty much, you know.
Oh, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because it's survival horror, supposedly.
Well, but
supposedly.
Given the sheer number of enemies, supposedly.
Supposedly.
Given the sheer number of enemies that they throw at you, and they even increase the roster, so you'll see callbacks to enemies that appeared in the first game, the second game, and then a whole bunch of new stuff. It's actually better because the moment-to-moment action is all based around, okay, I know what I got to do. All this shit's like rushing at me, or there's some stuff throwing stuff at me, and I have to basically, you know, figure out the fastest and most efficient way to dispatch everyone.
While staying alive.
Yeah. The enemies in 3 felt more aggressive to me than the previous two games. So, like, you have more guys rushing at you. I think there were some super fast dudes that appeared in 2 that make an appearance in this. So they're basically like regular necromorphs, except they're so fast that you'll see them off in the distance, and then a blur, and then they'll be over here, and then a blur, and then they'll be over here, and then they're right up on you.
Yeah, you pretty much have to use stasis.
Yeah, there's no way to just... Yeah.
Not a fan. Not a fan of that.
You don't like fast runners?
No,
I don't like blur dude who's now next to me and screaming in my ear.
It's good though. It does what it's supposed to.
That effect is that.
You see him in the background, you're like, oh fuck me. Yeah. You know, and like start spamming the stasis.
Yeah.
So that's a great enemy, although I think they might have been in 2. There's a new enemy called the Feeders, which are basically these little emaciated, like childlike skeletons, basically, and they're in packs. And when you walk into a room, they'll be like, you know, feeding or picking on dead bodies or whatever. And they won't actually, you know, give you any shit unless you aim your gun at them or get too close to them. But when you do, the four that are sitting there, you know, doing their thing are joined by
20 others.
Jeez.
And it becomes,
that's never happened before.
That's a good thing to learn once.
Yeah. It's pretty. So anyway, the good part about that and all the enemy variety is, while there are certainly segments where you get to get a little bit of fatigue, especially if you're playing it, you know, multiple hours in a row, where you're like, okay, I've seen these sorts of enemies before. The sheer number of different types of guys you can encounter really keeps it fresh. And it's because you're not shooting each one in the head or shooting them all.
Every week, I'm sorry.
The force is strong.
Go ahead.
With your sound.
With your sound. With your iPhone. So, yes, mechanically great. They've done a whole bunch of stuff, really cool improvements to streamline the game, a lot of which I think are because they added a co-op component.
Hmm.
So, for example, previous games, the first two, ammo management was a big pain in the ass. Like, you have limited inventory space and a bunch of different guns that all use different ammo. This game has universal ammo now.
Hmm.
So, but what you are collecting is the crafting system that they introduce. So you go to the weapons benches now, and instead of just collecting power nodes, which you use to upgrade your suit and your guns and all that sort of stuff, you actually are collecting resources throughout the game, different little trinkets and stuff, and you can construct weapons, weapon parts, attachments, all that sort of stuff, and basically make, you know, just thousands of different combinations of weapon types.
So Jeff's like, it's a universal ammo type, and I'm like,
It made me
think about the Last of Us, where it's like, oh yeah, your gun has two bullets in it, like that.
Yeah.
It's like a completely different approach to like horror, and I think really reflects in the
I think universal ammo is a real tricky, because it certainly eases some headaches, but it
would be a nightmare in co-op.
Yeah.
Right, because you're like, oh, dude, give me three of the line ammo and give me two of the, you're just like, oh, fuck.
Well, but a lot of games are like that with co-op, where it's like, I'm playing the sniper, I see sniper ammo. I mean, Gears was that way, right? Where it was like, don't pick up the sniper ammo. I want to pick, there's sniper ammo there.
Oh, that's true.
There's a little bit of added bonus to the tactics when it comes to co-op in that way.
That's true. And you do, while the ammo is universal, you can actually share stuff with your co-op partner. But the interesting thing is when you're actually collecting stuff, like you kill an enemy and something pops out of him, both you and your co-op partner can collect whatever it is that comes out of that. So, like, you open a little cabinet or a locker, that whatever's in there may not be the same for each of you, but you both have something in there to collect.
Oh, that's good.
So it's like Diablo
3. Yeah.
So it's like, you're never like, oh, dude, you took all the ammo again. Like,
I think that's an elegant solution. I really do. For co-op.
Yeah. That should be every co-op.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Every game. MMOs that don't do that. I'm like, why are you not doing this?
It reduces the I mean,
SWTOR had that with, as an MMO, like, stuff would go just, you got that. Yeah. What did you get? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And this is like, yeah, you still will be like, oh, hey, I'm low on ammo, or hey, I'm low on health packs or whatever, and you'll do some trading that way. But, and weapon parts too. That's the other thing. The weapon crafting system is actually, though it's more complex in terms of how many things you can make, it actually streamlines things. So in the first two games, you could carry four different weapons that were assigned to your D-pad.
Right.
This is, you can carry two different weapons, but each weapon has each weapon is assembled by, finding a frame. There's light and heavy frames and then special frames. And then you put a core, which determines what sort of ordnance it shoots. And then you put a tip on it, which determines how the ordnance flies out.
Oh, interesting.
And then there's
not like specific blueprints of specific
weapons? You can find them if you don't want to go in and experiment and craft. So you can find, like, I think there's, 30 or 50 prefab weapons that they've created.
Oh, that's cool.
And then on top of that, you can find circuit boards to enhance, reload or rate of fire or damage or whatever, and each weapon has a certain number of sockets you can plug it into. So it's cool, but the bottom line is, with each weapon that you use ostensibly functioning as two guns, because you can have an upper core and a lower core.
Oh, yeah.
So you can basically – you have two weapons, but you really have four. You're like, you have an upper and a primary and secondary fire for both, and it can be very interesting. I think as robust as the crafting system is, I ended up fully upgrading my – plasma cutter, and it had a planet cracker tip on it, which made it more powerful. And then I added a second engine on the bottom, which would fire electrical charged ammo. So it was basically like, if swarms of little things were coming at me, I could use the machine gun type thing, but for the most part, I was blasting my way through with the plasma cutter. So it's
though it was robust and very it's really not required. Honed into what you got, and you were like, "This is my joint. I'm doing it."
Yeah. Now, in fairness, some of that was due to the fact that I was like, after 20 minutes at a weapon bench dorking around, I was like, "Man, I got to get this thing finished and
right,
reviewed."
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So you don't. I probably would have spent more time horsing around. People made some really cool. I mean, Ozzy was using in our co-op match. He was using it's like a one of the shotguns that came with a limited edition or whatever. And by, you know, he had upgraded it and powered it up. And by the end, it was like, you know, I was like severing limbs, and he'd just walk in and boom and blow the whole thing into like shrapnel. It was,
and you just felt really inadequate.
Yeah.
You're like, stop killing everything. I'm trying to target their legs.
I'm being a surgeon, man.
Yeah.
So does it not feel like a departure from the previous two? Does it feel more like a shooter?
Now, single player is still a quintessential Dead Space experience.
It's good to hear, even though I'm not a fan. But
I will say, three games into the series, there is a natural amount of, you know, I mean, you know, the first Dead Space is, you know, it shocks you with all this crazy gore and all these enemies and stuff. And, you know, subsequent games, there's less of that newness and that surprise and that shock. And it becomes more about like, okay, how is this playing? It's still very atmospheric, but you sort of, I think that the series at this point, like, I enjoyed the third game. I think it needs to be shaken up a bit for the next installment, because, you know, while they have done a great job of continuing to expand the enemy roster and making the combat very interesting, it is.
So three doesn't finish the fight.
We're three games in. No, three's
never finished the fight.
Three leaves it open for a sequel. It's also, you know, sort of culminates in, you know, narratively the most ridiculous of the three games. I mean, you know, on the one hand, you're like, oh my God, this is absolutely ridiculous. You're like, oh wait, I'm playing Dead Space.
Is the Isaac Clarke trilogy concluded? Is it a trilogy?
No. It's not. In fact,
It's a necromorphology.
Yeah, but don't you also get? I mean, there is the sort of case for, you know, IP fatigue. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, even with this last Gears, it's like, oh yeah, it's Gears. I mean, it's fun, and I had a great time, and I played the heck out of it. But it was like, when Gears 4 comes up, it's like, am I really?
Yeah. That'll be on a new console. It'll be really exciting.
I mean, but to be honest, that's what it is.
But the new Gears that's coming out in a few months, you know, Judgment.
He's blonde though.
You know, like
totally blonde.
And I
like that.
And I totally felt the fatigue when I was playing God of War Ascension. I'm like, it's like, yep, I'm still fighting big bosses and doing
QTEs.
It might really be both. Yeah.
I'm sure
them needing to reinvent, but also just the sort of nature of
give it a little break. Now, high points include I guess I'll touch on that, the whole ice planet controversy, because everybody's like, oh my God, it's going to the planet and it's not in space anymore, and you know, whatever. So the first half of the game is pretty much in space, and then you end up on the planet. The planet stuff is actually it works more so because it is just when you're to the point where you're like, okay, I've been in space for a while. You get a completely new locale. You get it feels different. It's still very claustrophobic because, you know, your visibility is really, really short because of snowstorms and stuff like that. You know, monsters popping out of the snow aren't quite as scary, but there's some challenging combat and some cool sections of things to do. The high point of the game, though, for me, was a series of levels in the beginning relatively early in the game, where there's basically a flotilla of ships that are orbiting the ice planet, and they've been derelict for like 200 years, right? And so you're there and you're trying to figure out what's going on, and it basically puts you in a segment where you're doing, there's a, like this skiff, the space skiff that you can get into, and it'll take you between the different ships. And then you get out of the ship, and you can like zero G around and like collect parts and like go into the ships and stuff. And that stuff, I mean, the sci-fi dork in me really loves that stuff. I still think they do some of the best zero G stuff in any game. I guess the only other thing that I really, really, really want to touch on, I mean, there's more we can talk about, but is the co-op.
That's my big question. You've played it through both ways.
Yeah.
I'm curious when you liked more. And also, my big worry with whenever a game like this goes co-op is that it's like, I got my half of the Switch. Did you get your half of the Switch over on the other side of the room? You know, this door takes two people to lift.
Okay.
And that's the extent of co-opiness.
Okay.
Yeah. You know?
So there is some of that. There is some of, like, you know, you'll go to a terminal that you both have to hack, and there's a mini game that you both participate in simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So you both have to do that.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, the mini game part is cool. It's just the, like,
I'm lifting half. I can. Another guy needs to lift the other.
No, you know, I mean the closest thing is like there are some ladders that you run into that are retracted, and you basically have to use telekinesis to turn this lever that lowers the ladder. But if you let go of telekinesis, the ladder raises. So basically, you lower the ladder, your partner climbs up, and then he grabs you and pulls you up. Right. So that's there's a little bit of stuff like that. The coolest stuff though is. Well, optional missions are now in play. This is the first thing for Dead Space. So either single-player optional missions, there's co-op optional missions. So you'll be going through the story, and they'll be like, oh, you can go over to this section, totally different section of the game, completely unique content, not required. Co-op is like that too. I mean, you can play the whole campaign, and the cutscenes sort of change, and the story sort of changes a bit because you're both there.
Right.
But the coolest part of that is there are three, I think, co-op specific missions, and the second character, not Isaac Clarke, but he's like a kind of a space marine guy, I guess, and he's got post-traumatic stress and he's got some really dark past, and when you play these co-op missions, they do this asymmetrical co-op thing, which, while not utterly the most brilliant thing I've ever seen, the seeds of that are so great and have so much potential for co-op experiences that I'm super excited. So the most basic example is, I mean, the very first time you see, and this is sort of minor spoiler, but not really. There's you run into an area, the first co-op area, and John Carver, the post-traumatic stress guy, leans down to pick up. He sees this like toy soldier, like Nutcracker style, totally out of place in the environment. And he's like picking it up and he's looking at it and he's hearing like radio communications from a kid. And I'm like, hey, Ozzy, do you hear that? Or do you see? He's like, dude, you're not holding anything.
Oh, that's rad.
And he's like, I don't hear that.
That's rad.
And I'm like,
that is awesome.
I'm like, oh, dude, that's amazing. And they, it's so awesome that, of course, like you go, oh, man, I want more. I wanted more of that. I wanted them to push it further. Yeah. But what they do some really clever stuff with it. So,
I mean, Kane and Lynch, actually, the first Kane and Lynch did that as well, where I forget which one's the crazy one, but like player one would see like cops and player two would see like, guys in like creepy bunny hats, so you'd be like trying to shoot them down.
Oh my god! Yeah.
So it's like, why are you shooting those cops?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, or like innocent civilians. So it's like, you know, it really shows like a really cool.
You could build a whole game around that. You totally discern what's real and what's not real, and what I'm seeing and what you're seeing.
Yeah, it's like Max Payne, the original. It's like you only play the normal levels, and at the same time, the other person's playing. The
Walking
whole
blood
building
lines.
Is on fire. So he's like, Jesus, get over here from the store. It's like, what? I'm taking my. Calm down. I'm
just gotta get
this.
Yeah, I gotta get some pills. My pain pills.
I'm healing. My bandaging myself. The whole place is on fire.
So the way that they use it, and I'll do this without being overly spoilery, is there are things in the environment, like when you're actually playing, like set dressing, where it like totally changes the feel of the room, and there's stuff that's totally out of place, and the other player can't see it. So they're looking at you're like, and you can and as you're playing it, it's not so cool that you're like, wow, is that supposed to be there? You're like, oh wow, this is like all hallucinatory shit that I'm seeing.
Because
it's like overlaid on top of the environment and stuff. And then just when you think, I mean, so you go through a bunch of that. And remember, this is only three missions, but it's probably a few hours of gameplay. The third mission, they start doing stuff where, like you're talking about, where you're going through, and all of a sudden John Carver starts freaking out, and the screen. Like goes dark and basically takes you down a wormhole into this dream world where you're fighting aliens in this dream world, and you're and Ozzy's like, dude, you're just like sitting there swaying back and forth, and dudes are like coming out of the walls, and he's like, so he's trying to defend me while I'm trying to make my way through this.
Oh my god, it's amazing! Like,
and it's, you know, they're pretty short vignettes, but and I don't want to oversell them because the their potential is far more exciting than what they actually do, but it is cool. It is very cool.
And those are only missions that are available if you're playing co-op.
Now, I will say that it does sort of suck because if you want to see all that stuff, you have to play as Carver. Like Isaac,
switch back.
No, Isaac's character at this point is like, he's been through the hallucinatory stuff. He's sort of like a broken shell a little bit. Like he's just sort of like, okay, you know, like I'm the one that can kill the necromorphs, and you know,
let's do this.
Hit in and out.
Yeah,
space in and out.
One of my favorite things about Dead Space Extraction, the Wii game,
right?
Was it Extraction? I think that's what it was called.
Yeah.
But they had those co-op sections where like one person had to like hack something and while the other person had to defend the
hacker. They have those too.
Okay, so. Yeah, that was like the greatest. It's like I don't know how this puzzle game works, and like,
and I can't back out of it. Yeah,
you can't back out of it. But the other guy's just like, there's so many necromorphs.
You need to be smarter, fast now.
Yeah.
So do you recommend playing it through co-op? The first, if you're only going to play it once, do you think it's a co-op game? Or?
If you don't like for you, I would recommend play through it in co-op, because if Dead Space hasn't clicked with for you and it gets to the point where it's I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I get the sense that it's just it is a very tense and sort of dreary and oppressive experience, and it's very dark, and that does wear on you after a while playing that sort of game. Like it wore on me, and I like the game. You know, it just gets to a point where you're like, oh god, another dark room, and you know, it's time to soldier forward.
You should play Sly Cooper. It'll make you feel better.
No, I know that. I was going to say that's like the perfect palate cleanser after playing Dead Space. I got definitely picking up a copy of that. So, but yeah, I would recommend it. I would recommend playing through it. It is a very solid co-op shooter experience. It is not nearly as scary as it is in single player, mainly because they do ramp up the number of enemies you see and all that sort of stuff.
But that can sometimes not be a bad thing. I mean, one of the reasons why I've avoided it is because I still remember the sort of Doom 3 thing. I like being scared, but I don't like to not want to play a game.
Right.
Like, I don't want to move forward in Doom 3 because of what's going to happen.
You guys should co-op the shit out of this.
You
would probably really like it. And it's a little less annoying when you're playing co-op.
And I'm a co-op guy.
When you're like, oh, shit, things are going crazy. And when that thing's, you know, two or three guys come up behind you like they will, you have somebody covering your back. So it's not nearly as – you may still get munched, but at least you'll know that they're coming, and like,
well, at least you're getting munched together.
Yeah. The friends who get munched together die together, or whatever. I don't know.
Have lunch together.
Have lunch together. Yeah. Crunch and munch.
I don't know if you still have more on that, but you mentioned God of War Ascension, and so I don't want to go.
I mean, I just, I mean,
because you played it and we didn't talk about it.
Well, I mean, we don't have. No, I mean, just. Do you have any questions, man?
Do I have any questions?
How godly is it, and where is the
war? You're young Kratos.
Yeah, and
Kratino or whatever his name is.
Well, young Kratos looks exactly like old Kratos.
He does. He's less grizzled, I would assume.
I'm so confused by like that franchise lore now. Like I'm not exactly sure where in the timeline this takes place, and to be honest, I don't care.
Right, you're just smacking people.
Like,
and
he's still angry.
Gods.
Yeah. Like when was Kratos ever not angry? I want to. If they're gonna make a prequel, I want to play
baby
like,
Kratos.
I want to play like Kratos.
He's adorable.
The noodle seller.
Yeah, Kratos with like a Z at the end, published by Ubisoft. You know, that's what I want to play.
Kratos.
You know? Kratos Raven Rabbits. Yeah. Or whatever.
Like, I don't know.
More like Kratos.
I mean. I feel bad bashing Heroes. It because it's like it on every account it's great. Like the graphics are great, the gameplay is great, the boss battles are amazing. You know, but like
I just feel a little samey.
But yeah, just like the bar is like really high, and just like matching that bar, just like why not just play God of War 3 again? It's like $20 now. You know, like
yeah. Well, it's got new crazy stuff, right?
It has multiplayer.
Multiplayer is cool. Multiplayer is really fun.
Yeah, yeah. We played it at E3.
I feel like that's why they added multiplayer. The multiplayer is clearly where like the innovation of that game is. Like the team like made a multiplayer God of War game that actually works. Like it doesn't.
Yeah, it's fun. I remember playing it at E3. It was really fun.
Yeah. So I think props to them. But for like as a single player gamer, I'm just like. I feel like I've been there, done that, you know.
Are there any moments of what you played that pop out?
I mean, it's like, you like jump on
you're like,
giant
rip some dude's eye out. Yeah, rip his rib cage.
I took the head
open.
Of a minotaur and sat on it.
I mean, exactly. Like,
after
typical, you know.
After Azura's Wrath, there's nowhere to go.
I mean, they do a really good job of like scale. So like you have this like big like hulking guy like that's like 8 feet tall, and you're like, oh, like is he a like mini boss battle? And like, no, just like arm just like bursts through the wall and just grabs him and like crushes him, and that's the boss.
Right.
And so you're fighting him, and then like after you defeat
him, the Chains of Olympus thing.
Yeah, after you defeat him, like this bigger thing comes and like
and there's like, always a bigger fish.
It's like the Matryoshka dolls or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
The babushka dolls.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah,
nesting dolls of horror.
you thought this building-sized boss was big? No,
but that's what I loved about Azura's Wrath. It was like,
fuck all those games. You're fighting a planet.
Yeah.
And you can only punch his finger. And guess what? That was enough. You punched the fuck out of his finger.
You will punch his finger so hard that he will disintegrate.
Yeah, exactly.
That game does not get enough credit. I like that game.
And his expression as he's like, holy shit, I'm dying.
Yeah.
You punched the shit out of my finger.
I had my planet finger on you.
I was going to squash you. He did squish you.
He squishes you first, and then you're like, I punch.
I have six arms, bitch.
Yeah.
That game was fun.
That's Asura's Wrath?
Did you never play that?
No.
I really dug it.
Okay, I will put it in my
different.
I'll put it on my pile.
I didn't.
I know. I don't love it.
But
there were so many moments of that where like, I can't believe I'm doing this, and I have a smile on my face.
Well, that's why I like God of War. I mean, it's like Kratos' angry moments. You're like, okay, now.
No, but Azura is much more angry.
He's so much more. It's Wrath is in the title.
Yeah, true.
And there's like, you double bumper, and he gets angry. Like, you actually have an angry button that you get to push.
Capcom really has to re-release that game as like episodic, like
Downloadable game.
Or a Kinect version.
Yeah, make it like $2 an episode. Like, get people hooked on the first episode. I would totally like.
I agree. It looks amazing. It has so many really clever ideas. The combat system is actually decent. You know, it's
all right.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Screw these new games. Let's just play Azura's Wrath.
Let's play some Tiddlywinks, guys.
Yeah. Let's play Azura's Wrath.
And pick up sticks.
Sly Cooper 2.
And Hoopsies.
I brought my Tinker Toys.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, well, we'll take a break, and we'll be back. We'll talk about some other things. I'm actually going to talk a little bit about Google Fiber and why you want it.
I mean, everyone needs some fiber.
Yeah, it's really for keep
most,
you regular.
Most Americans don't get enough fiber.
Helps you pass that data.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games. Pre-order upcoming titles and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
Garnet Lee, how did he get in here?
What?
He's sticking around again already.
Just hops in to tell us about the Gamefly.
He's like a hop.
It's just such a great app.
It's a good.
Yep.
So, if there's anybody out there, possibly, and I doubt it, that doesn't know about Alex Albrecht, there are a lot. There aren't. You are Mr. MMO.
Yes.
You legally had your middle name changed
to Mr. Hyphen MMO
underscore.
isn't that redundant to have Mr. as part of your?
No,
Mr. Alex, make Mr. Sure. MMO Albrecht,
Mr. Alexander, Esquire. Mr. Albrecht.
It's your favorite John. So anybody that
doesn't
want to hear about MMOs, you're fucking out of luck because we're talking about them.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think now because I started my first MMO experience was on the Screensavers. With Star Wars Galaxies, which we did on like LAN parties.
Right.
Loved it. Fell in love with Star Wars Galaxies. Then did a Star Wars Galaxies podcast, which actually wasn't even a podcast. It was on a live gamers radio, internet radio site.
Right.
So it literally you could only listen to it if it was like if you were listening to it live.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah, which is sort of old school.
Inconvenient.
Very inconvenient. But it was fun. The four people that listened loved it. And then I did Project Lore when I got into World of Warcraft. So I've been sort of MMO. And they are my favorite games. And it stems from all of the things that we talked about this on TRS all the time. And actually, TRS is what made me kind of starting to actually review games and talk about games and what I liked and didn't like was what made me sort of come to this realization about myself as a person. And I've said this on TRS often, which is, I loved skateboarding. I never skateboarded alone. I would only skateboard with my friends. When I tried to skateboard alone, I was really bored.
It's awkward to get two people on a skateboard, though.
It is. It is very awkward. But we had really big boards.
Banana boards.
And then I realized, I was like, oh, yeah, everything that I enjoy doing, I always enjoy doing much more with other people. And so MMOs are perfect because you get the joy of playing when your friends are on, playing with other people. But then also, there is something satisfying about playing by yourself, knowing that if you get something cool, if you do something cool, there are going to be people on at some point where you get to go, look at this thing that I found! Yeah, this thing in my hand. Yeah, you got it. We can go try it. You know what I mean? So I just it just scratches all the itches.
Yeah. So you and I and our friends have all been addicted to Terra, which I've talked about ad nauseum on this show.
Yes, re-addicted to Terra. I was just explaining it to somebody. And yeah, we played it for a while, liked it a lot, and then kind of stopped. And then got back into it. I don't know why we got back into it.
I would think I was the one that motivated that.
You might have been the one, actually.
I really wanted to play them again.
Because I had our, because I think it went Terra. Did we do Terra and then SWTOR came out? No, it was Guild Wars. We
it
already
might have been Terra, SWTOR, Guild Wars.
Yeah, see, I think it was Terra. Cause it, although it couldn't have been Terra, SWTOR.
No,
because SWTOR was like, I mean, I had like 1,000 hours in SWTOR.
It was Terra, then Guild Wars 2, and then...
Yeah, it was Guild Wars 2.
Came back to
we did Terra, and then Guild Wars 2 came out, and we level capped on Guild Wars 2, at least Jerry and I did, and then, and Joshua. And then it was sort of like, oh, Guild Wars kind of sucks once you're done with the leveling part, which takes a very long time. Got my money out of that game. But then it was like, well, we should do something else. And then you were like, I wanted guys, remember Terra?
Yeah.
Remember Terra? And then Dan, one of our friends, was like, guys, Terra's a thing. We could be doing Terra. Yeah.
So did you guys go over to the free to play? Did you guys keep your subscriptions?
So
going?
The free to play just happened February 5th, which was literally 3 days ago or 2 days ago. And I remember because I tried to log in on Monday with my buddy and I was like, why is it not letting me log in? And it was like, oh, it's doing the free to play thing. And free-to-play is very interesting.
Okay.
The free-to-play dynamic. Some people, and because I've been playing MMOs for a while, I was really into D&D Online. Love D&D Online.
You only got into it after it went free-to-play,
no,
right?
No. Oh. I was pre-free-to-play. So I had the experience of seeing what...
It's pre-to-play.
It's pre-to-play. Pay-to-play, basically. and D&D Online was a very interesting MMO because it had this there were no it wasn't an open world, right? Everything was hub-based. So everything was instanced. Because also, like D&D, everything had to happen with up to between 4 and 5 players, right? So there were main cities you could kind of run around, and then you'd have to get into a group and go into a storied instance. Mm-hmm. But they weren't like hard like a regular instance. It was more like you would go into the area that was like a city or like a quest hub in an area, and that was how you did questing.
Right, okay.
When it went free to play, what they decided to do was really basically just go, well, we're going free to play, but really you're going to have to pay for stuff. So what it ended up doing was you only had like 4 or 5 quests that you could actually go on, and if you wanted to go into a new area, you would have to buy that area.
Right.
Man, that sucked. I mean, it really sucked. Yeah. And it was one of those things where I was like, why are you punishing me? If you're going to go free to play, it's because your game's not – whatever you're doing isn't working at $9 a month, at $15 a month, right? That's not my fault, right? So to then go, well, we want to entice people to come in by giving it away for free. But yeah, we're not even going to give you that thing that wasn't worth $15 for you to you. We're going to give you less than that and hope that you like the sample so much. You know, it's the freemium model, which works in sort of mobile apps. Kind of. But even now, mobile is even getting away from the freemium and just going...
I think it's all evolved to the point now where free-to-play has to mean perks are what you ask for money
or
for.
Or cosmetic stuff.
Yeah, that's what I mean by
exactly.
Like things that aren't integral to the game itself.
Yeah, and SWTOR went free-to-play.
Right.
And I was a huge SWTOR fan. I mean, that was my game of the year. I played the hell out of that game. And it went free-to-play, and I went back, and I was like, oh, yeah, free-to-play. But they did the same thing.
Right.
The raid content's not available. Some of the instances aren't available. The PvP battlegrounds aren't available. You know, there's a cap on the amount of gold that you can have, which is like, what in the hell are you thinking? There's a cap on the amount of gold you can have? Like, why are you punishing people? They didn't play the game because they didn't think it was worth $15.
Well, that seems like part and parcel of reverse engineering your MMO's pay model, like to a way that you're like, you got to make the numbers match, and we got to continue to make money. So how do we do that?
But then here comes Terra deciding to go free to play, and one of the first things you see on the patch notes of free to play is we're not going to take away anything that you were able to do for pay. No, there's no limit on time. There's no limit on content. There's no limit on anything. You can play however you wanted to play before. But now you have this – there's this store. You can buy the cosmetic stuff. You can buy mounts. You can buy bonus – like, you know, potions to get double XP, potions to get
more. You logged in since the
– I did log in. I did log in to try it specifically.
Did you check the store?
The store is not up yet because what happened was they were like, oh, yeah, this is a whole different structure of our game that we now need to figure out how to go live with.
Right.
I think the benefit to that game going to that structure is that it's so pretty. The game is so
and they
visually
already
stunning.
They already had that whole thing. They already were selling cosmetic items for money.
And they had a whole amounts that they would just sell for money. And so it was already a little bit of a taste. And I think that they're just going to blow all that out at this point. And because there's there's a sexiness to the character models that I think people – and when they were given away – like in the summer, they had you can get like beach shorts and sunglasses and stuff. And I think they're just going to go wild with all that.
Yeah, and on Christmas, they had like the Santa Claus hats and the reindeer ears. I mean, it's stupid. And it's one of those things where I was like, I'm never going to care about it. But you know how much I was trying to get that goddamn Santa's hat?
I know.
I was like, and you gave me one.
I did.
Which is close to my heart.
Well, but also, I wanted the freaking lion more than anything. The lion mount, because it looks so good.
Yeah.
It looks so good. And every time you ride on the lion, you feel fucking awesome. Yeah. But now I've ridden on the lion and I want the next thing. There's the freaking lioness thing Dan bought.
Yeah, yeah. Our friends have paid. And but the bottom line is the genius of it. And some companies have really come to realize it. There's a lot of iPhone developers that were early in the iPhone game business, huge iPhone developers that literally just go, we're never going to sell an app. We're just never going to do that anymore. We make so much more money giving an app away for free, making it high quality, and then giving you little perks. I mean, one of the games that I fell in love with, I don't know if you guys have played it, The Middle Manager of Justice, Double Fine game.
Been playing that, yeah.
My God, that is fun. I have not paid for anything in that
game. No, I haven't either.
However, I'm fine waiting the 20 minutes to level something up because I know I could just pay. You know what I mean? So
what you got to do is you got to get... Like what I do is like I have five of those types of games.
Oh, interesting.
You just rotate them?
And you just rotate. They're like, okay, we're done. Okay, brilliant. Everybody's all queued up working. Okay, let's go over see Pixel People. What are Pixel People doing? Okay, let's do that.
Oh, my God. I love that idea. I'm totally doing that idea now.
Why not?
Jeff just single-handedly destroyed
the
industry.
Yeah.
Like, the NPDs, like, tomorrow they're going to come out.
Yeah.
Revenue plummets 98% digitally. We're all out of a job. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Or just pay for stuff that's free, you know, if you want.
Or you could be that other guy. But it's funny because another one is like League of Legends is a great example. You know what I mean? Like that's free.
Yeah.
And people spend hundreds of dollars on that game, hundreds of dollars a year on that game. And they wouldn't pay a monthly fee. Or maybe they would, but you know what I mean? Like,
those people probably would.
They would. And that's the difference is, you know, if you can get $100 or you can get, you know, $60 over the course of a year from every player, or you can get, you know, $600 from one player and 10 get to play it for free or 9 get to play it for free, you're still making the money, but yet you're going to get so many more people to come and play your game. And now, one of the things that you mentioned was WildStar, and one of the things that they haven't done yet is announce what they're – to me now, unless you're Blizzard or you have a crazy IP like Star Wars, there is no reason why you should come out as an MMO nowadays with all the data to back up that you get about 6 months, and then everybody goes, yeah, there's another one coming, or yeah, it's okay. It's fun, even if it's the best game.
Those 6 months are where you turn a profit, or at least you cover your development cost. I mean, I kind of think the way it's working now is that free-to-play is sort of the old folks' home of MMOs. You know, like we're sending them out to pasture.
Well, but Guild Wars didn't do that. They weren't going to do that from the get-go, and it was very successful monetarily. Yeah. So
and Sony,
I don't...
Sony Online, you know, all their games are free-to-play, and they've been doing a lot better since, you know?
I'm just thinking now when games are coming out, because... You know, I'm buying the collector's edition. You know, I bought the $120 collector's edition of SWTOR. You know what I mean? I also paid the monthly fee, but...
Yeah, I think you bought multiple copies.
Also, I actually have more copies.
Yeah, you're definitely the minority. You might be the only... John Riccitiello should, like, sign you a letter and, like, you know...
Oh, he did. Oh, me and John, we go way back. I bought his lake house.
I didn't think I got four copies of SWTOR.
Yeah.
So let's talk about a little bit about WildStar, because a new info came out about that game. We played that... Was it last E3 or the E3 before? I think it was last E3.
It was last E3 because it was the E3 where we played Guild Wars 2 as well.
Right. And we got jazzed about that game.
Way more than Guild Wars.
Way more than Guild Wars as we were standing there. And they were like within 5 feet of each other and we were hooked on WildStar.
Yeah.
And now there's all this more, all this new information that's come out. And the guys did a DICE presentation.
Yep.
And
remind me real quick. To go back and talk about Star Citizen because there's
there's
some new info about how death is going to work in that game, and it's a persistent universe and some really cool ideas.
Well, we can hop into that right now if you want.
Yeah.
Oh, just I read through the article really quick. It's up on Robert Space Industries or whatever, but he's talking about how, you know, creating this persistent universe, and he doesn't want it to be, you know, he's talking about the whole checkpoint thing where you're like, it removes any sense of urgency or fear or, you know, like risk, because you're flying out into space and you're like, well, if I die, I'm just going to go back to the last checkpoint that happened 30 seconds after I did something cool. Well, he's going back to that mentality of Wing Commander where it's like, you know, you go out on a mission and until you dock your ship back at home base,
you're not safe.
You haven't done it yet.
But he's also talking about stuff like not permadeath per se, but when you create a character, it's like you're in his barracks and there's like a, you know, male and female restroom, and you go into whichever one you go into determines your gender. You like wipe the mirror off, and you determine your character's face and stuff, and then you write a will, or like my next of kin is blah blah blah, right?
Wow.
Like my son or my uncle or whatever.
So if you die, that person starts.
That's who you become. Yeah, but it's not just simply you get blown up once and you die. It's more complex than that. So you're out in a space battle, you get blown, your ship gets blown up, you have a couple seconds to eject maybe. If you eject and nobody blows up your ejection capsule.
That's like an Eve a little bit.
You'll show but a little bit different because they he's describing it as lives. So like three lives. So even if you get blown up, like even if your little capsule pod gets blown up, you'll have like a certain number of opportunities, three opportunities to resurrect that character, but there will be damage on that character model that reflects. So you might need a cybernetic arm, or you might need an eye patch, or you might need.
Interesting.
So you can look at other players in the world and go, oh, dude, that guy's been in some shit.
That guy ate shit.
Like,
that's cool.
You insure.
He's got cybernetic everything.
You actually you buy insurance for your spacecraft, which is really what your character is.
Yeah.
It's like that's what you're upgrading and leveling up. So you buy insurance for that. So if it gets blown up, you don't have to pay for everything again. So it's like, it's
how
this
are the premiums?
Whole, what's that?
How are the insurance? Are the deductibles horrible?
Well, I think you can insure anything, but it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of a risk reward. And like maybe once something's insured, it's insured. Yeah. I don't know how all those systems are actually going to work.
SWTOR had that, I always say that. Star Wars Galaxies had something like that with Jedis, where early it was permadeath for Jedis, but there were only like two. One on a server.
Yep.
And it was crazy because we had a Jedi die on my server and it was like a big deal. Like the guy was just like, are you kidding me? I mean, because it was so much time. But there is some of that thing of like, do you go out into the world to show off your Jedi or do you stay at home where your Jedi is probably not going to be murdered? You know what I mean?
Right. No, exactly.
Because they also had the cool bounty hunter system where like if you wore your Jedi robes out, you would get flagged as a Jedi and then you would show up on the bounty hunter boards for fee.
There was a lot of cool stuff about that game that just
Jeff knows.
Don't get him started.
Every time I start talking about Star Wars Galaxies, he's always like, God, that sounds so awesome.
Alex talks about it, it's like the greatest game ever made. But then when I played it, I was like,
no,
I was the same
conceptually,
way.
Conceptually it's the best game ever made in execution.
Yeah,
and
that's
know.
What I'm afraid of with like Star Citizen or whatever. You know, just, like, it's so early on.
Oh,
and,
dude.
There's so many. Like, there's.
Chris Roberts has earned
Big
the right
promises.
To burn my ass. Like I've played enough Wing Commander and Privateer all. I mean, I will buy whatever that is that he makes because
I just want to. I hope there's a class where I can be space insurance salesman. I'm like knocking on your space door.
Yeah, guess what? You could do that in Star Wars Galaxies. You could literally
make
money
selling. Can I have a few moments of your time?
Yeah.
I have some really great opportunities here.
Another sale. Pachoo!
Have you thought about your next of kin?
You know, don't write that off, actually, because, you know, it is a full-on, it's not just space combat. It's like there's a full-on economy and trading, and you can play it like Privateer and stuff. So
it'd be awesome.
Maybe somebody will be selling it.
It'd be awesome to have like a L.A. Noire-esque minigame where you have to judging if your sale is going well by the facial expression.
I totally ripped that guy off, man. Oh, now he's after me.
Oh, he's got stink face.
We were talking about WildStar a little bit. It's a game that I am so excited about. And hearing this DICE, I don't know if you guys heard about the details of it, but they're basically setting out they're kind of doing the Babe Ruth calling their shot, where like we want to fix what's wrong with MMOs, and we want to make it was interesting. He's like, you do the boring stuff to get to the end game to do boring stuff. He's like, it's shitty stuff to get to shitty stuff, and he's like, we want to only do fun things to get to more fun things. And they were talking about taking making weekly updates that are story based updates, so you're literally getting more lore content in the not just end game. You know, the lore happens while you're leveling, which is really interesting. Alex, you want to?
I got really excited about it. My favorite quote. One, I liked the fact that they're looking for endgame stuff, but unlike other people who are really running away from large raids, a lot of the games are going, 10 to 5 is sort of the raid thing. They're going into 40-man raids, which I love that idea because I never got to experience that in WoW. By the time I was getting into WoW, they had dropped it down to 25-man raids. But even 25-man raids, I mean, you did some 25-man raids.
I did a lot of them.
It is like the craziest thing ever. You know what I mean? Like when you're one of four healers, it's a totally different experience than being the healer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're like, okay, your group is these people. It's like it's really intense. So 40-man raids is really cool. But also to say people who don't want to do raids or that 1% of the population on your server that is actually going to be able to get in and progress through raids, there has to be stuff to do at the end game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And SWTOR tried to do this.
It's not just trade skills and dailies.
Yeah, and SWTOR tried to do this where it had a whole story planet at level 50. Was it 50? I think it was the cap. But the sentence that blew my mind, the sentence that got me really excited was when he said, people do boring things. People get rewarded for boring things, do more boring things. People that get rewarded for doing fun things, do more fun things.
Yeah.
And that to me was a great example because I knew so many people in across every MMO I've ever played that did really boring things.
Because that's how you
get the
reward.
Admitted that they were highly boring. I hate doing these.
Yeah, you end game grind reputation or something.
Right.
You're doing the same three quests 1,000 times.
Yeah, that's not fun. No. And the designers know that is not fun. They just didn't have an alternative.
It's just a treadmill. Like, it's just a time suck.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, these guys have all this time to put in. We got to give them something.
I understand the whole subscription-based thing. And like, obviously you want people to be subscribe, but don't you think? I mean, like, wouldn't it be great if one of these MMOs just decided, okay, look, there's the level cap's insane. It's going to take you hours and hours and hours and hours to get there. But you know what? When you get there, you can start another character, or else you're done. You know, like there is an end game.
The game is over.
The game is over. You have completed your thing.
I don't think that's the draw to MMOs, though. MMOs, the draw is I'm investing in something.
Well, what if you like?
I'm not playing a game
to complete
it. Well,
I don't know because SWTOR could very well have been that. And one of the reasons why I had said that I loved it so much was because I didn't really look at it as an MMO in the way that I looked at Star Wars Galaxies. Star Wars Galaxies more than even WoW, where it was sort of like a living, breathing world where you're interacting with people, you had housing and all that stuff. That was fun. I looked at it as what I had always wanted, which is a co-op BioWare RPG.
Right.
And it was an amazing co-op BioWare RPG because we get the the story-driven stuff. And at the end of that, when I hit level cap, when I finished out that story quest, I was satisfied.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, had it
been literally pitched as it's, you know, Dragon Age 3 and you can play it with your friends, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah,
the
I
Old
want
Republic,
that.
It's, you know, like, 7,
it's,
8,
it's
9,
coach,
whatever.
Yeah, it's Knights of the Old Republic 3.
But I guess you want something like the prestige system from Call of Duty, right? Where, like, once you hit the level cap, it's like, well,
that's what one of our listeners pitched to us a few weeks ago.
Or have it, I don't know, do something different so that it's a, like, and not to go back to Star Citizen, but so it's like you pick a character and you live out his lifetime, his lifespan, whatever, and maybe it's not instant death, but there's some sort of end to that person's lifestyle. But instead of ending the game, it's like you pick up the quest as, you know, one of his progeny.
One thing that I was like really interested by Mass Effect 3, when you get to the max level of a character, you could retire that character by sending him into the single player game, so the Galaxy at War stat would change or something like that.
And
then you could start a new character, that's sort of like what you're saying. And I feel like there's definitely a lot of room for exploration here in terms of how to completely change the way you approach an end game.
Well, and that's what WildStar says that they're trying to do, which is to go, how do we make the end game fun? How do we make being done with the linear story of the game? And it's true, because even with Star Wars The Old Republic, where I knew the story. I mean, unlike most MMOs where I just grab the quests and go.
Well, that's actually what I was going to ask you is the story component. Obviously, the BioWare thing, that's kind of what drew you in initially or me.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it was Star Wars, but being able to make conversation choices and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So when you play and it's social, because that's something that I never – whenever I've tried a bunch of MMOs and I basically get to the point where I'm like – either the story is just completely uninteresting to me or the delivery is so dry that I'm just like, dude, I don't want to read another wall of text about just what do I need to get to kill or get or whatever.
I'm pretty sure I've read 2 or 3 quests in my entire MMO experience. So, I just don't care about them.
So do you think do you think there's a way to make that more – because that's part of
what – Well, that's what SWTOR did, in my opinion. Yeah. That's what SWTOR did, was you walk up and you see an experience of why you have to go do that thing. Now, what you went and did was very classic MMO.
Right, sure.
Why do I need to kill rats for this farmer? Well, because I see the farmer crying and he goes, hey, man, hey, you got a gun?
Rats. These rats are infested with the dark side.
Exactly. But there was enough of that that I was like, oh, okay, I get – It was a plus one to me. I would have killed the rats anyway.
But the narrative,
you crying really made me
think about it.
The narrative building that you're doing though is largely with the group that you're playing with, right? You're making your own narrative, and so therefore it does have a narrative. It does have like, hey, we went out and did this last night. I think part of it too is just, I don't know. I don't know that. Well, I mean, MMOs are not designed to be played solo for the most part.
Right.
And the ones that allow you to play solo and, you know, for any length of time just don't do that. Do a very good job of making it an engaging experience.
Yeah.
Well, narratively.
And that was the thing with MMOs in general. That's why it's so hard to, you know, innovate and iterate, because one, you know, Guild Wars 2 is a great example. Guild Wars 2 didn't have classes per se. Right, there were some healers, there were some tanks. I mean, there were classes, but it wasn't rigid like that. But then when you go into a dungeon, and I did a lot of the dungeons, even some of the end game dungeons, it's just chaos. I mean, it's just mess. It's just, are we gonna make it? Nobody's doing anything specific. They're just kind of hitting the same guy. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
There's something so elegant about that whole. The triad of the great trinity of MMOs, of somebody's literally their job is to make sure that you don't get hit by the bad guy and take all that damage, and there are some guy to make sure that guy doesn't die, and then the other guys are there to make sure that we get to kill the thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
It just, that is hard to innovate on, and I'm interested because, you know, WildStar did talk about how they wanted to some new stuff, and I'm excited about it.
The thing that most excites me about WildStar is that they keep saying, and we saw a little of this at E3, just a taste of it, but they, in their dice talk, they really hit on it, this idea that exploration is a viable mode of interfacing with the game, that you can in an MMO space, you can literally explore and find new things. And they were talking in the dice talk about how, you know, they've got this –
there's actually a profession that is an explorer.
Exactly.
That profession can only get certain ways.
A set of underground tunnels you can explore. And I find that to be such a tricky notion to pull off in an MMO, where you've got thousands of people giving you the answers to everything online all the time. You know, so how you can manage to have surprise, which is a key element in exploring, you can instill that, preserve that, and make it not just a random, you know, like I found a crystal down that hallway instead of the other hallway. There's got to be more to it than that. It's got to be really about, you know, discovering new lands and new areas.
Well, and also, if it's a class, that's where I went, whoa, okay. Guild Wars 2 had a lot of exploration and jumping puzzles.
I loved it. Yeah.
But I was also my, you know, fighter guy. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like I chose to be an explorer. Whereas, like, with Star Wars Galaxies, if you wanted to be a crafter, you chose to be a crafter. You had no combat abilities.
Or a hairdresser.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Hairdresser. Yes. But you had no combat abilities.
Dancer.
So it was like, or dancer.
I would love to see the stat breakdown of like
how many dancers there were.
Yeah, like how many
the
people
real crime,
gravitated towards each
other. The crime with all that is that that fucking flopped and that they retreated from it and they made WoW. And the fact that nobody has had the balls to sort of experiment in that territory since.
It's because I think that you either half-ass it like they did where you have all these cool systems, but then when you get down into it, it's like, wow, okay, I'm a hairdresser, like – what do I, you know, how much stuff can I really do? Whereas
like real life.
You have to make that shit fun, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're like, you know, I don't know. The hairdresser is a bad example because I don't necessarily think that'd be fun. But like
the hairdresser just would have been better with Kinect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
Well, but another example
dress
was
that hair.
The doctor.
And go to the left.
The doctor wasn't supposed to ever go out and be a healer. There was a combat medic. But then there was a doctor, and the whole point of the doctor was you would get buffs. He would be the only way that you would ever be able to get buffs. So you would literally go into a hospital, and there would be a guy who's the
doctor. Just staying here today.
Literally, they would
– I'm ready to buff you.
I actually – they would sell buffs because the whole point was you couldn't go out pre all of the NGE and the combat upgrade and all that stuff. You literally couldn't go out into the world and get hit by anything or you would die. So you would have to find a doctor to buff your skills so that you could take that hour or two when your buff was on to go do your combat stuff.
Yeah, but the doctor's day is pretty boring.
I had a doctor at one point, and it was kind of cool because you stand in the medical thing, and somebody runs in and was like, I have all this damage. I need it off. And you're like, okay, 1,000 credits. And they're like, well, but I don't –
that's the extent of what you do. You've just completely described all of it.
Well, yeah, yeah.
We have not completely described all of this show for you. We got a whole nother segment coming up. Plus, maybe I'll lament the Super Bowl for half a second.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Stick around. I think someone's playing a prank on us with that song.
No, I'm really glad you guys used my iPod finally.
I don't know, but I just trained and stuff. Like, I'm already ready to beat the 80s villain.
I just trained and stuff.
I think you also fell in love and drove to a new city.
I got dumped by the popular girl that I was trying to get with and found out that my best friend girl was actually the one who I should be with.
You should have realized that all along.
I did, finally.
It took a while for you to get to that.
The earrings I bought for that she told me to pick up for the popular girl I gave to my friend.
And you're a werewolf.
And I'm now a werewolf.
Yes.
Man, you're some kind of wonderful.
I don't know what kind. So there's a few things I wanted to talk about, one of which is congratulations going out to Alex, who's getting married.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes.
His bachelor party was last weekend.
Correctamundos.
It was crazy. If by crazy you mean
nerd.
Nine dudes in a cabin not doing anything other than playing games.
Yep. And not sexy games.
No.
Because that sounded a little
sexy. And not reindeer games.
Not reindeer games.
No, we played Dungeons & Dragons, and I mentioned this at the end of last week. I was really excited. It's the first time I ever was the DM of a Dungeons & Dragons game.
And phenomenal job, my friend.
Thank you.
Phenomenal.
I was really stressed about it. I was really worried how that was going to be. I'd never done it before, and there's a lot of pressure on the DM. You know, they're guiding you through the adventure. And if you've never played Dungeons & Dragons before, I highly recommend it. But it's so much of the experience is dependent on who's DMing because they set the pace. They create the fiction. They got to sort of
– it will become your favorite thing to do.
Oh, it already has.
Have you done it before?
Back in the day when I played. Oh. That was my favorite thing.
When I was younger, I used to DM, but you know, not so much anymore.
You don't DM anymore? You're trying to pull back on it? So there was a comment in the talk back last week from Lorem Foll, which I guess is it goes to Forum LOL. I guess LOL. I don't know. Anyway, he was asking to hear more about my DM experience, so I'm gonna talk about it. He said some questions for thought. Does DMing in a pen and paper game make the choice you have in a video game feel really limited in comparison to what your players could do? That's one you could talk to. How was that experience versus in a video game where it's sort of you can either do this or you can't?
Depends upon the video game.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Little Big Planet, kind of do whatever you – or Scribblenauts, you know what I mean?
Yeah. A little more – Yeah, and in some open world games, you can have a little more freedom.
Yeah, but
there's never as much freedom as I grabbed the drapes and I threw them over the bad guy's head, and then you know, like you can literally do anything.
To be honest, I think because I've been trained on video games.
By the way, I always take out bad guys with drapes.
You always take out bad guys.
You're a drape caster.
I'm a drape caster. That's exactly
you're like,
right.
Chiffon.
Taffeta.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're like, oh, you get a negative because that doesn't match.
Sorry.
That clashes, so you get a plus.
You're in a Burberry house, so yeah.
You're in a Burberry house. Amazing.
The only problem with that is that you can only be a drape caster if you're playing on Windows. Heyo!
D, very important in that word.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think because of the sort of the way I've been trained about video games, I think more linear when I walk into a room, even on Dungeons & Dragons, when I know I could do anything. But at the end of the day, I was like, but really, I should shoot that guy with my shoot thing. You know what I mean? Like, I could do, I'm going to juggle. Let's see if that works. You know what I mean? But I usually fall back to I should flank him and shoot him in the butt with an arrow.
The most fun I had in that experience was, when people were doing – somebody said something that I had no plan for, that I did not anticipate whatsoever.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then I would sort of just have to make up what happens because of that. You know, and that's the most fun thing. Like – there was a part where when Jerry was like, talking to a character and intimidating that character.
Yeah.
And there was certain, and then he like rolled a 20, which is a crit on his intimidation roll.
Yeah.
So I had to like spill it. You know,
intimidating.
And it was.
And you were trying not. That was the funny thing, because I remember afterwards you said, I really didn't want to tell you the information that I ended up telling you.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we just did it good.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you literally were trying to get out of there. We were like, wait, let's try this. And he was just, he happened to be rolling
well. And the thing is that people probably don't realize is the malleability of your story in you might have a dungeon and there might be some sort of part where there's logical progression from room to room. But for the most part, when you're doing a D&D thing, it's like, I got through about 15% of what I planned, and now we're off doing this, which is awesome. But yeah, you're really.
Well, we didn't even go into one room.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I think this really relates to video games, because I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the modern role-playing game is just evolved from people attempting to substitute the computer for the dungeon master, right? So. It's such – anybody who plays video games and has never had the experience of playing D&D or any pen and paper game with someone who's there to sort of create a fun experience for that group, I highly recommend it. It's so different, and it really highlights for me how far away we are from achieving that goal of really creating – having the computer – the computer can do a lot of things a hell of a lot better than a person, and a pre-written story is often going to be – you know, better than what a dungeon master is going to come up with on the fly, or even if he's prepared something. But there's something so magical about having that ability to improvise and to sort of have this give and take between the players and
it's super freeing, right, when you're playing and when you're DMing, because it's not like when you're playing a game, regardless of what it is, even if it's the most open world game ever, you're always consciously aware that, okay, I'm in within these game systems. I know that there are X number of things that I can actually do. I mean, even in Skyrim, right? You're like, well, I can do a lot of stuff, but I can't, you know,
pull the drapes off the wall
or make a paper airplane or whatever. Yeah. Like, I mean, so yeah, I think that's what the thing is like, you're like, I can actually do anything. Like, I mean, as long as it makes sense within the story we're telling. You
know? Yeah. And
now I wanted to know too, and I asked you this, but I know. As a player, did you have as much fun being the sort of, you know, the Oz behind the curtain, seeing how it all structurally works, was it as fun as being somebody who experienced the story?
I had more fun. I had more fun being a DM than I did being a player.
Interesting.
Because as much fun as it is being a player, and you know, you're still waiting for your turn, and you're a tiny part in the cog. And I got to have fun as the DM on everybody's turn.
Yeah.
Because I was reacting to what they were doing, and I was, you know, and how much fun you guys were having, and when I would reveal a bit of information, even if that information was as simple as you hit or you didn't hit, you know, yeah. which I don't have any control over. I'm just, revealing what the dice roll tells me.
Right.
There's so much joy in like parceling out that information to the group and seeing your reactions, and everybody's having a good time, and you feel like you're kind of responsible for it. You know,
yeah.
it's a blast. It's really fun. There's a lot of shit to keep in your head, and it's a lot of work. Especially beforehand, I was really scared. So, you know, I'd never done before.
Well, you did a lot of work, too.
Yeah, I wrote a sort of custom thing for us.
It was amazing. Oh, mind-blowing. It was like all bachelor party-themed dungeon. And everybody was like, you need to put this out. Because anybody that is, you know, a human male that wants to or is going to get married will understand the, you know,
I bet you could sell D&D Bachelor Party if you...
Oh, easily.
I'm serious.
D&D Bachelor Party.
Well,
I would put that nerd.
I might change the title slightly. Starring Tom Hanks.
Lauren Fall also asked if I cheated on any of my die rolls for the sake of the game.
Ooh.
And there was one time, and I think you probably remember it, is when Mike was going to die. He rolled, damage that was literally going to kill him because he was already down and bloodied, and it was going to put him in negative.
Oh yeah,
his bloodied
yeah,
number.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, no, it was. You're still alive.
Yeah.
And I think that it was another one of those moments where it sort of shed light on what's fun and what's not fun. Like the first few rooms you guys went into.
Yeah,
you
were powering through,
rolling through, and killing everything easily. And I was really worried that I was like, oh, man, they're just overpowered for this. It's not going to be a challenge. And then the last couple of rooms, it really got to be a challenge. And that's what you want. You want it to be like any good drama, you want you have to overcome odds, and you have to be a potential to lose, but then you triumph in the end. You know?
Let's just add a 50th level lich right here.
I mean, that's what I love about Left 4 Dead. You know, they really try to have that virtual
and dynamic level adjustment, I think, is exactly what you're talking about, which is, you know, orchestrating the ebb and flow of a game. And Left 4 Dead was perfect with that, where you're just like, we can't just stand here, guys, because we're doing really well. That means a lot of things are coming around the corner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think you can probably take that to a whole new level. And
I'm surprised nobody has copied that or has adapted it.
I mean, I still find it weird that like there's difficulty settings in games. You know, it really should just be like just play and the game will figure it out.
Right. Yeah. Sort of leads me to, I think the game, it was the Shack News game of not this year, but last year, Witcher 2. And I think the Witcher series is as close to playing Dungeons & Dragons really as I've ever gotten.
D&D Online is pretty... specific.
Well, I guess that's true. But I mean, in the sense of like you feeling like you're in a world that adapts to what you do.
Right.
They announced Witcher 3 this week.
Hot damn.
I know. Could not be more excited. But some interesting changes to that formula is that they're saying it's going to be much more of an open world game.
Bigger than Skyrim is what they're saying.
Yeah.
Jesus.
How do you feel about that?
If it were anyone other... There are very few developers they've got their pedigree, what they've done with The Witcher 2 and what they're, you know, purportedly doing with Cyberpunk. That's one of those studios that has earned the right, they get to burn me at least once.
Because you're drawing a list of people who can burn you.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, but
a lot of people can get in or around your ass right now. I'm just saying, it's a whole long list.
But I mean, it's like, you know, you I don't know, you play enough games and you develop an affinity for a developer or a, you know, certain company or whatever always delivers.
You'll follow them into the gates of hell.
Yeah.
Until they
except for
fuck
Hellgate.
You, you know?
Yeah, until it's hell. It's
Hellgate London is what it is.
Until it's
like it's like you know, the pre-Daikatana era, right? Like, you know, you're just like, oh yeah, I totally trust what this guy is going to do. Yeah. And then, granted,
you know, I mean, I'll probably know if it's going to crater and burn long before I ever have to look at it or touch it. CD Projekt Red, the idea of that, like if any other developer, almost any other developer, maybe Bethesda came out and said, like, yeah, we're going to do this, I'd be like, bullshit, you are. You know, I'd be like, nobody's ever done this. You haven't even proven that you can even get close to doing what you're saying. And CD Projekt Red is one of those developers that, fuck man, they say they're going to do something and they pretty much do it, and they over deliver.
Like, is that what you would want for that franchise though? Were you clamoring for more of an open world experience?
Well, so I don't necessarily think when I picture them doing an open world experience, I picture quests that can be picked up in a non-linear order and you know, similar to Skyrim. However, I also picture much more interconnectivity between the results of different actions that you take.
Yeah,
so there may be a lot of these. It may be open world. You may be able to approach things the way that you want. But I just get the feeling that there's going to be a lot more of, holy shit, this town all of a sudden knows about this side quest that I did halfway across the map, or my reputation as a giant slayer has suddenly like permeated the, and you're going to be like, whoa, this is pretty awesome. And I know Skyrim does a little bit of that too, but the degree and the level of detail that CD Projekt Red, you know, puts into that sort of stuff,
I kinda wanna
they
go
are blazing the trails
right now.
I feel like I have to. I don't even really remember.
It's a fucking awesome
dude,
game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good. And
I think that I didn't never played it after they sort of came out with the difficulty adjustment, but the end was a little frustrating. A couple of the boss fights were a little frustrating.
No, do it. I mean, the difficulty adjustment definitely makes it less of a, you know,
pain in the ass.
It will punish you. Like if you play, you know, the whole thing with potions and oils and like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. putting stuff on your weapons and
traps,
drinking the right stuff before battle. So it's like a lot of it's very tactical. And if you play on even the notch up above normal difficulty, you pretty much have to, you know, pre-prep most battles. Like you're gonna get your ass kicked. So
the most interesting comment in their press release was that it's coming out for all high end consoles.
Oh,
which means it's next gen. Next gen.
Oh yeah.
So probably not very soon, but. Man, I cannot wait for that. That just rocketed up to my most anticipated game that I know about.
Yeah.
Super. I mean, hopefully they can keep I can only imagine that their focus is still on narrative and storytelling, and that they are figuring out a way to put that into an open world game in a way that nobody's really done it before. Or I could be totally wrong, but I don't think I am.
What about you, Andrew? Are you stoked for that? It's not really your type of game.
No, I mean, it's really like I got to see how the engine works, like just in terms of scripting, and just like it's just mind-boggling. And you know, it's interesting. That's how they approach game design. You know, they really work on the script first and how like everything interacts with each other, and then they put a graphical element on top of it. I think it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how they pull that off in an open world environment, you know?
I didn't have much chance to play games this week. I was traveling a lot, but one of the places I traveled to was Kansas City, and I got a chance through another show I'm doing, I got a chance to check out the Google Fiber compound that they've built in Kansas City. If you haven't heard about
sweet download speed,
if you haven't heard about Google Fiber, it's the gigabit up and down. It's not just download.
Up and down.
Gigabit up,
it's
gigabit down.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that they're rolling out, and the first city that got it was Kansas City, Missouri, and so
hotbed of internet technology.
Well, it is now.
It is now.
Yeah. We visited this thing called the Startup Village, where it's like all these guys from all over the country and the world are converging on Kansas City to take advantage of the high speed internet to like do startups. And there's this house where they're giving these.
That's actually a really smart idea. Now that I think about it.
There's this house that this dude bought that they call the Hacker House, and if you pitch your freaking awesome idea, and they let you stay there for 3 months rent free to work on your idea, and you live there, and you're just like in this house with these five like young dudes.
That's awesome.
It's like a camp.
I can send out so much spam.
Yeah. And by the way, make millions of dollars.
But so I got a chance. And there's also the Google Fiber Space, where you can go and the public, you just walk right in and they have people demoing stuff for you. And I got to play around with all of it. And I'm here to say the idea of gigabit down and up blows your mind. But playing with it, you realize it's a fucking game changer. Complete game changer.
Really? Yeah. So what way? Because that's the thing we're all sort of like, hey, that's nice, faster. Well, but I mean, how does it really?
Well, first of all, the biggest thing that blew my mind that I didn't anticipate was when you have that kind of bandwidth, the limiter is no longer internet speed. The limiter is technology. The limiter is your computer. The limiter is everything has been built for a certain level of internet input,
right.
And now everything is going to have to change. You can't – like I plugged in – I was all excited. I was going to test it out on my own laptop to like see my stuff. Plug my laptop in. News to me, my laptop only has 100 megabit –
gigabit
card.
Yeah, the gigabit NIC cards were big. I mean, because you don't have gigabit in your house.
Yeah, why would you ever need that? Yeah. I have a 100 megabit card. I've never approached 100 megabits.
Yeah.
This is 10 times that.
Yeah, and I remember when gigabit routers were coming out in like 2005, 2004, and it was like, why do you need a gigabit router
in
your house?
Wireless G and wireless N don't support it.
That's 54 megabits.
Yeah. So all, first of all this technology has to change,
right?
Because you can't just use the devices you've already got. Like I was using a Nexus 7 tablet. Doesn't have it has wireless N and G in it. You know.
Yeah. Right.
But also, so some of the stuff that they were showing, they were showing true cloud based gaming,
which
we all can see. Like that is possible where you have zero latency because you're throwing up and down that kind of
It was really interesting to hear because Gabe Newell was sort of poo-pooing cloud gaming as sort of a non-viable future for
–
because his thing – and this is actually the opposite of what you're saying. His thing was that, well, the bottleneck is not going to be
the computer.
Everything's going to be happening on the client side, right? Everything's going to be processed because that's where the bottleneck's going to basically be on the internet side eventually, right? The processing power. And he may be right even with Google Fiber.
Oh, I think
However, the short game is probably not that. It's probably
the problem is Google Fiber isn't coming to anywhere but Kansas City anytime soon.
Yeah.
That's the big problem.
Well, right.
Also, his point is that, you know, maybe cloud gaming will work, but the solution isn't to be streaming 1080p video both ways.
Right.
You know, there must be a better way of doing cloud gaming than that, you know?
Well, they have one of the things that they've rolled out in Kansas City already, and that's just part of the service, is full television service. They're your cable company as well, and they're delivering uncompressed 1080p, like even the high definition stuff you get it, you know, through Time Warner or whatever, is compressed.
Yeah, and AT&T UVerse does the same thing. I mean, that's basically like there's no coax cable. You know what I mean? Like my box takes an Ethernet cable, and that's what delivers the internet as well as my. But it's super compressed. 1080p.
Uncompressed, like it's literally like.
It's gorgeous. True. Like it's like a Blu-ray.
But Blu-ray is compressed as well. Blu-ray is AVC.
Well, it depends on the provider. It depends on the station. Like if they offer it, but they were showing me like comparisons between, you know, what you get at home and what we show you, and it's like, night and day. And they give you a fucking 2 terabyte DVR.
First off, they have to. That's only 20 minutes.
With like uncompressed video, like 2 terabytes goes by. Like,
and they were saying 500 hours. Yeah. But
you said it's a huge difference. You don't even realize it. When you opened up that internet and you're on that computer, what was it that made you go, oh, totally different than I thought?
Okay, granted, we're in Google land, so everything I'm playing with was Googly stuff.
Sure.
The googly eyes.
Yeah.
No, but like for instance, opening up Google Maps and going to Street View and just hanging out in Street View. And it's you're wandering around the city in Street View. Like,
and it's not like flips and flips and
it's
flips.
You're just flowing from one location to another in Street View. Or
that's
you
cool.
pull out on Google Maps and, yeah. and you're – and
you have to do that, otherwise you get handheld.
Boy.
Get a lot of thumbnail maps.
Garnett's going to be mad he missed this episode. You can scroll around while, you know how usually when you scroll in a map, it like half of it ain't fucking loaded.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah. Right.
I mean, you're in, I'm not talking about just the map view. You're in like full like photo.
Oh, the satellite.
From the satellite
yeah, yeah,
view.
Yeah.
And you can just scroll around. It's smooth.
And
that's cool.
Google searches are faster than ever.
It's exactly. True. I mean, I really felt like being able to push that kind of visual fidelity over the web,
yeah.
It's going to be I mean, all I could think about was gaming. All I could think right. about was
all I could think about was porn gaming.
Was porn gaming.
Porn gaming.
Yeah, he was like, he opened like five full 1080p YouTube videos at once and just like would skip around in them. There was no lag at all.
Wow.
And I was like, you're showing me how porn's going to be.
Yeah. You're like, I can't handle that much porn.
Yeah.
My
we,
poor
we
hand.
Know Andrew Yoon does not want 1080p porn. We
it
established
is.
This.
HD porn is bad.
It's a shit show.
It's
and
a
not even
sometimes
when,
literally.
Not even when you're on shitshow.com. Don't go to shit show.
By the way, that's definitely a site.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure it is.
But no, seriously, like that the amount it just everything that I would not go to, I would go to the web and like I'll pop down into Street View and pop out of it, or I'll I won't do things that are graphically intensive.
Yeah,
I just won't
for
do
speed.
Them
for speed,
speed
and,
for efficiency.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's all instantaneous. It's incredible.
So how do you think advertisers are going to feel about that?
Well, that's I think they're
like
salivating,
be, yeah,
right?
I'm
because
sure.
You can deliver HD content instantly, no problem.
Right.
And there's no like there's no waiting. You don't have to wait for an ad now.
Right.
I mean, and other than forcing you to watch it. But
well,
but it'll be over quicker now because it won't take as long.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing on, you know, although I did yeah.
But if you can stream, yeah. I mean, if you can literally stream that amount of data over the web, I don't think you have to worry about whether the loading from a drive anymore. You know,
yeah.
if the technology catches up to the speed.
Well, and that's also – but that's also Google Drive. That's why I have Google Drive for writing where it's literally – it is what was Google Docs
yeah.
is now just Google Drive. So it acts like a hard drive. I can save
yeah.
to it as long as I'm connected. As long as I'm connected, I can full on save to it. I can pull from it. You know what I mean? And I would be more than happy to store all my stuff on a private Google Drive and not have to worry about loading it off of the computer if it was that fast.
Right.
There's also that fear of, you know, what if you don't have connection? What if it goes down? You know, there's always that stuff with cloud computing.
Yeah.
It's just nice to know that no matter what.
I got it here.
I got
if
it
you
here.
You think of like a gaming application where you could – you're not worried about – your Blu-ray drive being slow, you're just – it's just pushing all the world data to you in real time, you know? And
awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it really blows it wide open. Unfortunately, we're just not going to get it.
Not forget that most of this – well, not most, but a lot of this country still doesn't have broadband, period.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing that I was talking to all these people there and they're, you know, they were saying that they would come into a town, knock on people's door and be like, hello, yeah, we have – 100 times faster than you've ever experienced the internet, and they're like, oh, "We don't have the internet. We just don't. We don't have the internet at all. Why do I want that?
You're in Kansas City. Come on.
Well, but also that's the same thing with digital televisions. That's why people were like, "Oh my God, there was a big deal converting TVs to digital.
Yeah, with the over the air signal.
A couple years ago, and it was because people didn't have HD TVs, because people hadn't had TVs. Purchased after 91.
Well, yeah. Well, that was – it was like –
you know what I mean?
The
it was like
that over
half the TVs were not purchased before 91. Like,
well, the idea that
over
the air was even an issue to people. Like,
right.
People are just fucking tuning into what's on the air.
Yeah.
Four channels that are on the air.
I use over the air.
Yeah,
great.
Well, all right. You're a contrarian to the bitter end, Andrew Yoon.
But the thing that I got excited about when we were driving over here and you were telling me a little bit about the Google Fiber, because I was like, when is Google Fiber to me? I want it in my house.
Mm-hmm.
My household, right now, please.
Yeah, me too.
Was that you were like, look, it's not just that Google's going to get into this business. It's that Google's going to show everybody who's in this business, hey, you need to step the F up or we're going to come down to your house.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Google makes money by having people on the internet.
Right.
So they don't give a shit about whether they're the people that install the fiber or somebody else does. They want other people to install it so more people get on the internet.
And there's a lot of – there is fiber out there. They just don't have the crazy caps. Like I have fiber. AT&T UVerse is fiber.
Yeah.
It's just that their max download speed is like 54 kilobits or 45 kilobits or kilobits.
Wow.
Horrible. 1987 was like, Jesus, that's some fast internet. Say.
You're like, I'm on Uverse.
Let me dial
yeah,
up.
Exactly. But it's like, it's, you know, it caps out. The most you can buy is 45 megabits down. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's very fast.
Very fast.
Compared to a lot of people. But that's
until
also.
Until you get to fucking gigabit.
Yeah.
I was watching the, we did speed test. Ugh, anyway. All right. Enough talking about the future of what I don't have. Quick I literally comment. Asked the lady, I was like, are my kids going to get this or am I going to get this? You know, like, right. Is this my lifetime?
Bearing in mind, I don't even have kids yet.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this 9 months out? all right. This is a fun show, guys. Thanks a lot. We'll be right back with finishing moves.
Finishing moves. All right. Andrew Yoon, finish them.
Your talk about Google Fiber just reminded me that Time Warner Cable is the worst company ever. And
yeah, it's true.
And I'm sure there's some good people that work there, but all of you should just die. I'm sorry, all of you. It's a terrible thing to say, but
there's an easier way to bring a company down, I think.
But
yeah. just be a better company.
Yeah,
two choices: be a better company, or everybody at the company die.
One or the other. Whatever.
Okay.
Your choice.
Whatever
free play.
Floats your boat.
Free play.
I mean, they were miserable back in New York. Just reliability, speed issues, just everything was terrible. I remember one time we called in a repair guy. He shows up and he's like, guys, why don't you get Fios?
He's like advertising for a different company?
He's
That's
like,
amazing.
He's like, I use Fios. It's great. You should have used this shit. That's how bad Time Warner is, that their employees refuse to use their own service.
And they have a monopoly on the Lakers coverage.
That was another
do they?
Another great thing I forgot to mention about the Google thing was that they showed this video about the installation of the Google Fiber thing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, the big bullet point was, we will arrive at the beginning of your availability window.
So I moved into a new apartment and I'm like, you know what? I'll get real internet. I've just been using a Clear, which is a 4G provider, so it's not that great. But I was just like so adamant about not giving Time Warner money because they have a monopoly in my area. But I'm like,
wait, nobody else in your area supplies anything?
No,
me too.
Internet, really? For me too. Yeah.
I was Comcast, and then I have AT&T Uverse, which
well,
is great.
There are other options, but none of them are good. So like, you can get wireless through a satellite provider, but it sucks.
This 4G internet's not going to be good when I have a roommate because, like, you know, it's barely good enough for, like,
that's
one
person. That's like
2G. Exactly. 4G divided by 2, yeah. I'm Asian. I like math. I'm like, all right, I'll call in and, you know, order it. I picked up my box from Time Warner, and they're like, you know, we'll just flip the switch on and you'll have internet. And I'm like, all right. It's like, but give us 2 days to get it started. Week later, still don't have internet. I call them up, and they're like, oh, we forgot to send someone to your building. It's like, oh, thanks. That's great, I guess.
You mean to flip that switch that takes 2 days flip?
You're like, is it okay if I forget to pay my bill for a bit?
Yeah, right.
No, they've already charged me at this point. So I call tech support, and they're like, you know, so they're like, oh, yeah, someone forgot. We'll send someone over tomorrow. But, you know, while we do that, do you want to upgrade your plan for, like, $10 more per month? I'm like, fuck you. I don't even have internet to upgrade.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know if I need an upgrade because I haven't checked my email yet.
A week goes by, still nothing.
This is a finishing orgy right now. It's not a finishing move. Go ahead.
Still nothing. And so eventually, I'm like, this is absurd. You know, I've paid, and like half of this month, I still haven't had internet. So they finally send a guy. They're like, you know, they'll be there between 8 and 9. So obviously they showed up at 2 p.m. The guy's like, he's like, I don't know what to do about this. And I'm like, the best thing is the guy on the phone was like, and remember, if you hooked it up incorrectly, we're going to charge you a $39 fee. So I'm like, so you're insinuating that if I'm just a retard that doesn't know how to like plug the thing from the wall into this box that you're going to charge me. I'm really glad that you think that I'm that stupid. I guess I am, because I'm giving you guys money.
They're like, see here that you've been paying for the last 2 weeks and we haven't done any service.
I guess
you put the box in wrong.
Yeah, I am clearly stupid, because in spite of like hating this company, I am still giving you money. I have no service and I'm still giving you guys money. So clearly they're winning. And so eventually the guy shows up. And he's like, he's like looking for how to set it up, and he goes through the emergency exit and sets the building alarm off.
Oh my god, amazing!
And so like, I'm like, we're not going to evacuate the building, but so anyway.
So after Time Warner Cable sounds.
Time Warner
after,
Cable.
After
Time
three, Warner Cable, after 3 weeks,
Andrew is not stopping.
After 3 weeks,
he's on a roll.
I finally have internet. I think.
It's residual 4G from Clear.
Wow.
It's like,
this is just so slow.
All right, I will go next, because I'm going to provide the opposite spectrum of customer service. After last week and Garnet's praise, I had to have Ni No Kuni, even though I didn't have any time to play this week. So downloaded from PSN. Turns out, very big game.
Yeah.
Very big game. Yeah. 15 gigs.
Oh, yeah.
And don't you need double the footprint to download that?
Weird that you know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
What do you mean double? You mean you need 30?
It's like the same thing with iOS crap. Like,
what the fuck? Why isn't app, that a thing? When you see on your thing you have 18 gigs free and you want to download the 15 gig thing, boy, that sure seems like it should work.
Ba-boom, ba-boom.
Ba-boom, yeah. Ba-boom. Okay, so maybe I'm the only idiot that doesn't know that. Okay,
I didn't know that.
I was not trying to make you feel stupid.
No, I'm
at all.
Sure
that is,
everyone
that is...
in the forum will make me feel stupid, because I'm sure everybody's like, well, duh. Well, here's the thing. I didn't know that. Fine, fuck it. I'll take the lumps on that one. Delete almost everything from my hard drive. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I don't need to. I'm never going to play that game again. Delete that save game. That's, for some reason, a gig of save game, whatever. So anyway, I get down to plenty of fucking hard drive space, plenty. Start downloading the 15 gig file, 44% in, which is a good 2 hours, because I don't have Google Fiber. It would be like that in Google Fiber. Right. Craps out, error message.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. All right, start it again. Oh, you don't have space to download that. Well, I just was downloading that. Oh, so the fucking crapped out version that I error messaged out in the middle
exists somewhere, but you can't.
God knows where.
Yeah, it's Google
Fiber.
So Fiber,
I am fucking pissed
Holy
off.
Shit.
I'm pissed off.
Yeah.
I get on to I'm looking, Googling it and looking in forums and trying to figure out, how can I look at data that doesn't show up as data and what can I do? Get on the official support page. Boom. Would you like to initiate a chat? Yeah. I'll initiate a chat. Hi, I'm Stephanie from Sony. How can I help you? And I'm like, are you a real person? Yes, I'm a real person. What can I help you with?
Siri.
That's what a cyborg would
say. Yeah, exactly.
Well, explaining the problem. No. Jeff, can I call you? Give me a number that I can call you. Put in my phone number. A couple minutes later, rings. Hello. Hi, this is Stephanie. Super helpful. Couldn't be nicer. Like, she knows she's a gamer. We were chit chatting about the game she digs.
Is she single?
Well, I would assume so. She's a gamer. I couldn't have had a better customer service experience. Sad news is I ended up having to format my fucking hard drive. So I was like, I guess I'm just all my like 15,
well,
18
those,
hours into Final Fantasy 13.
Like, so an external hard
I could have. I did. Yeah, I was impatient.
Is it your understanding that this is a regular thing that happens?
I didn't get that sense. I mean, she definitely knew how to handle it.
Right.
And she gave me now I know how to get into safe mode on my PS3.
Yeah, I was about to say, couldn't you just.
We did. We tried multiple. She was great.
Yeah.
The point of my story is she's not Time Warner Cable, and I don't wish her and her coworkers dead. She was fantastic.
So slightly different outcome.
Angry as I tend to be about the PS3, and I know people think I'm whatever biased, I feel like there's some stupid shit that happens, and it takes twice as long to do some stuff, like download anything. And I left
anything.
I left here right which happens all the time. Yeah. I left to come here, which started a new download. So if I come home and it actually made it through without crapping out, I'll be.
Oh, so you could be Time Warner Cable.
But she was great. But the point is that she was great. Yeah. All right. Who's up next?
Oh, I'll do a quick one because it's really not that long. My finishing move is I picked up Little Inferno for iOS, and it is fucking awesome.
Really?
It's so. Do you guys familiar with this? What platform did it come out on initially?
Wii U.
Oh yeah, okay. So I definitely don't.
So it's like a little mini game. Basically, the premise is it's this really cute but really dark premise about a little inferno is a fireplace, and your screen is basically a looking into a fireplace. And there's this little narrative story, characters sending you letters, but basically the setup is you're a kid who's got a little inferno fireplace and the world is really cold and it's always snowing outside. And so what do? You burn all your stuff to stay warm, right? So it's got this, pyromaniac sort of fire mechanic where you basically touch the screen and a flame comes up and you can actually burn whatever you've put in the fireplace with realistic fire physics and very, very cool. But the game part comes in that there's a puzzle element. They give you a bunch of different clues, and they're like, okay, burn these two items or these three items together, and they don't tell you what the items are, and you have to sort of puzzle together which things to burn together. Mm-hmm. So it's like the puzzle is like figuring that stuff out. But the art style is really, really charming. The items that you're burning are, you think of it, it's they're all super wacky and weird, and like none of them are like, you might find a toaster in there or something, but most of them are like, there's a lot of indie video game references and little characters and things and, pills and juicers and bricks and blocks and just about anything you can think of. And they all have really, different effects. So when you burn, like, say, a smoke alarm, it'll start beeping and then it'll start raining in your fireplace and put all the fire out and you have to burn it again. Huh. So it's like little neat stuff like that, but very, very fun. I was kind of surprised. It's $5, and it may just be iPad. I don't know if it's universal, but super fun.
Cool. It has like a pretty dark story too, right?
Yeah. It's this narrative about these little kids that are like, you get this
burning stuff.
You get this letters from this little girl next door, and she's like, "Oh yeah, I sent you this cool stuff to burn," and it's like, like
another story of the girl sending you stuff to burn.
Yeah.
All right. Alex,
have you guys talked about Space Team?
No, Jeff wanted to.
You guys haven't talked about Space Team.
We were going to play it the other day.
We played
pre-show.
It at his bachelor party.
Holy Space Team! So Space Team is an iOS game.
It's maybe the most brilliant thing ever.
It is one of those games where it's so simple and yet nobody had done it before. To this extent, and it makes you go, why didn't I think of this?
And it's another great example of asymmetrical co-op.
Great, great example of asymmetrical co-op. So Space Team is an iOS game. I don't know if it's out on Android or anything like that, but we played it on our iPhones. And ostensibly, it's a 2-4 player co-op game where you form a space team. You are like engineers. You're like in the bowels of a spaceship. And what happens is you're presented with a panel of switches and dials and settings that all have very fun pseudo-gibberish space sci-fi names.
Right.
Then you start traveling, hurtling through space. And what happens is a command will come up like, set hyperflop to 3. And if you look down and see that you don't have a hyperflop settings, you have to say to the other person who is playing the game, set hyperflops to 3. And they will have a hyperflops thing. Well, the commands come fast and furious. We played it with 2 people, and it is
ridiculous. We played it with 4 people.
Well, I played it originally with 2 people, and it was ridiculous and fun. Then we got 4 people playing it. It was some of the most fun I think I've had playing a video game with 4 people.
We were laughing.
It is
so
phenomenal.
Hard.
Okay. Well,
the thing that's so brilliant about it is the writing.
Yeah.
The writing of the names that you have to say out loud.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They walk that straddle that perfect line between complete gibberish and stuff that could sort of theoretically be something you would read in a sci-fi novel.
Yeah.
They'll stick into something like, wash the dishes.
Yeah.
So you're like, set hyperflux to 14, turn on, activate flibbledy flab, and then it'll be like, wash the dishes! Wash the dishes!
My favorite was I had a leftovers button, and the button was refrigerate. Yeah. So every once in a while it would be like, set the hyper beacon to 4. And I'll be like, set the hyper beacon to 4. Refrigerate the leftovers. He's like, leftovers. Refrigerate. Refrigerated.
What was the thing that
No, did? My favorite was Mike. Dance, Mike, oh, Mike. My friend Mike was like, he said, it's something with the, I can't remember, it was like the retrofit.
The retrofit.
Yeah, he's like, use the retrofit. Use the retrofit. What do you want me to do with it? And he goes, unfurl it. Like, it was so clear that that's all you. It. Oh, yeah, unfold it.
He goes, the retroflip. The retroflip. And Dan goes, what do you want me to do with it? And he goes, unfold it.
Like, that was the only thing. And I did have a button that had a name and had two different things you could do for it. So I get why he would say that, but it was just so.
It's
we had so
brilliant.
Much fun.
It's simple and it's brilliant.
And it's free.
I mean, games that encourage you to look stupid in front and with other people, those are always the best.
Oh, and the other bit. Sorry, I know this is your thing. But the other bit that is that at certain points you have to hold it upside down or shake it.
Hyper surprise.
And only one person knows that you have to do that. He has to yell to everybody else. So everybody else has to shake.
So it says, like, asteroid. Everybody shake. And you're like, asteroid. And everybody has to start shaking, even though they've got a command that they're supposed to be doing.
Oh, it's brilliant.
But the thing that the one thing we thought would be just a plus one to already way over 10 would be if it was also recording the audio.
Yeah.
Or video, even better.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that you could literally just listen back
play
to you guys.
Back
like,
the
everybody else is doing it well. La, la, la.
Because we were doing vines of it, like, all because it's such
so great.
Crazy sounds. You're all, and everybody's so intense because there's a timer ticking down or else you know you're going to explode.
It was Space Team. Free. And free.
Super free.
So great.
All right. Well, so we'll play it one of these days.
Yes.
All right. The only thing left to do with this episode is to congratulate Del Rio on another fucking asshole victory with the Super Bowl pick. He was the only one that picked the winning team whose name shall not be mentioned.
I don't think it will be quothed anymore. God.
Nevermore.
Nevermore.
So congratulations to Del Rio, begrudgingly. I slept in a pool of my own tears last weekend.
As well as other things. There's a lot of pools.
But thanks for sticking around and listening, you guys. It was a great show. Thanks to Jeff and Andrew and Alex for coming and hanging out.
Yeah, it was fun.
Excited to hear what Garnet has to say next week. Thanks to Brooklyn in the booth. Ozzy, who came and hung out. Always Dave, even though I hate him. At this point. We will see you guys next week. Until then, of course, without Garnet, we are goats. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard, don't you know we play harder. For me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hear me with another round. I gotta feel she's ready. This episode of Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the GameFly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the GameFly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.